Before we get to this week's Survivor Feedback Show with Tyler Fredrickson here in the studio, I want to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, and those are the people over at Legacy Box. Legacy Box is such a great idea because we all have so many home movies on all sorts of different media that we can't access anymore. There's so many people in our lives that this would mean so much to be able to go back and look at that old stuff, and it's just impossible based on the advances in technology. That's where Legacy Box comes in, because they were able to take those old home movies and make them into something that's accessible on any number of devices. I myself have been meaning to do this for the longest time with all of these home movies that my grandfather shot, that he had one of these gigantic camcorders probably before anybody else, and we have a million of these tapes, and this is something that I need to do for my family for this holiday season, because you could be the family hero when you could bring back these lost memories that are completely forgotten for your entire family to share and enjoy. The way Legacy Box works is they send you a box where you give them all of your old home movies, your tapes, your VHS, whatever. They're able to professionally digitize those memories onto a thumb drive, a digital download, or a DVD. The box is completely secure and it is going to be safe. Legacy Box knows that these are one of a kind cassettes and media, and they're going to take the best care of your stuff every step of the way. You're going to get updates every single step, up to 12 personalized email updates. 450,000 families already have trusted Legacy Box for over a decade, and all the work is done by hand right here in the USA. There's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. Visit LegacyBox.com today to get started, and for a limited time offer, they're offering our listeners this exclusive discount. Go to LegacyBox.com/Rob to get 40% off your first order, or save up to $200 off the largest Legacy Box kit. That's at LegacyBox.com/Rob and save 40% today. Get started preserving your past at LegacyBox.com. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's the Prime Minister of Podcast County, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast for episode number 3 of Survivor, David versus Goliath. And we have got a great feedback show for you here today, because we have a guest with me here in the studio. I'm very excited to welcome him back to the podcast. He made his voicemail debut last season. It went so well, and there's no place to go but down now. But here he is, here in the studio, Tyler Fredrickson. Tyler, how are you?
Hello, Rob.
Tyler, how are you?
Rob, I listen to a lot of podcasts throughout my weeks.
Yes.
And some I like, mm-hmm. and some I like a lot less.
Yes, go on.
And these podcast hosts have guests on the show. Mm-hmm. And the guests are always, it's so good to be here. It's such a privilege. What an honor to be invited back. But Rob, what if the guests don't feel that way?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're not excited to be back.
Rob, how many podcasts do you think you do a week on average?
Probably around like 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm. And which is the one where you think you know everything? The one where everything that comes out of your mouth is truth, it's all canon, where you know it all?
Not the Patron 5 for 5.
Okay, because I listened to a podcast on Wednesday.
Yes, yes.
And I brought a clip with me. And I want to play that clip. I'm going to let that clip speak for myself.
Okay.
So
let's go back.
Play the clip.
And then Tyler Fredrickson is going to be here in the studio this weekend.
Is this the first T. Freddy appearance on the podcast?
No, he was on the voicemails last season, and people were very pleasantly surprised.
He's great. He's great. He knows the show so well. He's so enthusiastic. He's such like a positive, like he's always like so upbeat and happy. Just
upbeat and happy. Wow.
He's always just like such like a great positive force for life.
Tyler Fredrickson.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's just so nice.
I mean, he was great on the voicemails. Don't get me wrong. A positive force for life.
So when is it going to end, Rob?
What going to end?
When is Survivor? This storm of criticism and
cyclone
doubt and of blatant hate and questioning, because Rob, the rain keeps coming down.
Yeah.
The wind keeps whipping. Cyclones are turning into typhoons and typhoons are turning into cyclones. I don't really know the difference between the two of them, but I'm happy to be in the game, Rob. I'm on the tribe, Matt of Life, and I'm smiling.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were great on the podcast last season, and I love hearing from you. I'm always excited to see you, but, you know, the force of positivity in the world probably isn't how I would have described you.
You know what force gets me through the day?
What's that?
It's thunder.
Thunder.
It's thunder, Rob.
Yes.
You know why? Because the thunder is real.
Thunder is
the thunder is authentic, Rob. The thunder makes me feel something.
Because you're not being like a major force of positivity at this moment.
All right. Let's switch gears. You want to know what makes me happy, Rob?
What makes you happy?
You want to know what makes me happiest, Steven, in the world? The fact that there isn't a millennial versus Gen X somewhere in this house right now being a part of this podcast.
Yeah, so. You know, there have been very few millennials versus Gen X
I'm
people.
Happy. Hey, Rob, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having
Good.
Me.
Tyler, very excited.
Was that a little overdramatic? Was that a little much?
you came in hot, and I think that people appreciate the energy.
Well, you lose some, you lose some.
Yeah. all right. Well, anyway, it's nice to have you here in the studio, and we were on Skype last time, so now we have taken the next step in our relationship here, podcast in the studio.
I feel like we got woke.
Yes. I would even say that we are even wide awoke.
I'm like wide awoke.
Like B.
Like almost like Katy Perry.
Yeah, just almost like just it. Almost. All right. So, Tyler, very nice to have you here on week number 3 of Survivor David versus Goliath. A lot of podcasts already going on. We had the aforementioned know-it-alls, the exit interview from this week, which I have a feeling we may speak about as well. And then I spoke with Eric Reichenbach. All those podcasts are up on robinswebsite.com and in the podcast feed. Wiggle Room still to come on Monday. Do you do the Wiggle Room?
You know, I didn't used to.
Yeah.
So at one point I started thinking about the Wiggle Room, Rob.
Yeah.
Let's just take a bird's eye view. Let's take, you know, you're in the emergency room and you some kind of out of body and you're looking down the lights and the doctors and everything. The Wiggle Room is a very respectable professional journalist.
Yes.
Who comes alongside his partner, who's a respectable and a podcaster. Mm-hmm. And these two guys, one takes on the guise of a dead celebrity host, a radio
That's
jock.
Right.
The other one takes on some middle-aged screaming woman.
Middle-aged is probably, you know, flattering.
This is, and then they sing songs about Survivor covers. This is what it's come down to. It's awful, Rob, but I will tell you this. I can't stop listening.
Okay. All right. We'll take it. All right. As long as you don't give up on it.
I'm in. I'm on board now. I think it's great. And I love Wiggs, and I love what he's all about.
All right. Are you enjoying the David and Goliath of it all so far this season?
I think so. I mean, as I said last time I was on the show, Survivor, Survivor, Survivor. So just give me more. What I'm actually really enjoying this time is I think that it feels like the producers are really having a lot of fun with the edits.
Good. They should.
They should. And it seems like it's been a long time.
Yeah.
So I'm really kind of enjoying sort of not the artistic approach, but just the way they're editing around characters and playing things and nuances that sort of bringing out a lot more than we're used to.
And the people I'm talking to on the podcast streets, I feel like seem to be enjoying the season. So we're happy to hear people are enjoying the Survivor, and hopefully we have a lot more fun to go here in Survivor David versus Goliath. So Tyler, you know, we didn't really talk about this the last time you were here. We sort of just got right into it. What's your backstory with the show?
With the show.
Yes.
So I did not watch season one. Actually, I saw the finale. So I was actually at training camp. I was playing with the California football Golden Bears. Mm-hmm. We were at training camp and one of the offensive linemen came in. He said, guys, it's the end of the biggest show on TV. We all get together and we kind of conglomerated in this little hotel room that we were staying at. We watched at the end of Borneo. And I was like, OK, cool, whatever. A few years later, I kind of got caught back onto it and I mm-hmm. started to enjoy it. And then I went back to grad school at USC in 2008 and was really latching on.
Yeah.
So Russell kind of changed everything for me. Finding Idols Without Clues sort of transformed everything. And it wasn't until 2010 that I applied to be on the show
mm-hmm.
and got really close on Caramone. I was already going through getting costume and wardrobe all confirmed. Got pulled about 2 weeks before the show. Never thought of it again. I was so offended, so frustrated going through the process and getting my heart ripped out.
You know, what year was that?
That was Caramone.
Okay.
Fans were, I don't know, that was...
Season 26.
26, yeah. And so Max was there, a couple other people were there. So I was like, you know, I'm never going to do this again. And then a few years later, I got a call from Cassie and they said, would you want to come out for Blood versus Water? And I was like, well, do you want me? And they're like, well, do you want to be on the show? I'm like, you know, you stabbed me in the back last time, pulled me out from 2 weeks prior to going. Do you want me on the show? And they're like, well, do you want to be on? It was kind of this back and forth. And finally, it's like, all right, I'll make tapes. Ended up making four more tapes and then got cast on Worlds Apart because they wanted newbies and they couldn't find anybody in my life who wanted to be on the show.
Yeah.
So they bumped me from Blood versus Water onto Worlds Apart the next season.
Okay. And then your background on the show that, you know, we know that you were the sports background of being a professional kicker, but you also had the background working in casting or at an agency. Was it CAA?
Yeah. Oh, is that what your question was referring to?
No, I feel like that we haven't ever really done like the... Mm-hmm. backstory on you. So I think that people know that you played college football, but then also you went to go work in Hollywood, right?
Yeah. So I played college football for 5 years.
So how did you make that leap from being, you know, a student athlete to then you tried out for NFL teams, but then went into casting?
Yeah. I had a hot cup of coffee in the NFL. I played for seven teams, got cut and fired, hot and fired, hired and fired, hired and fired. After 5 years, I was like, I'm done with this.
Which is the life of a kicker.
It is. There's only one kicker and one punter per team. And at the time that I was playing, I was really good at both, but I wasn't great at one or the other. I kind of would flop back and forth. So you end up sitting on Sundays watching at home, whereas other teams
have... Green Bay could call you by the end of this podcast.
Yeah, here we come. I'm coming back. You know, whereas if you're a third string quarterback, you can be making, you know, $4.5-7 million, whatever you want, just holding a clipboard and having a headset on. So I decided after being done with football that I wanted to get back into stories. I love movies. I'm a huge Star Wars nerd and Jurassic Park nerd, Spielberg nerd. And I was like, I want to get back down to Hollywood. So I'd come down to Hollywood and start passing my resume around to people. And people were like, what are you doing down here? Like, I want to learn. I'll start off whatever I got to do. But I played in the NFL. I got this work ethic and nobody cared. Like, you're going to get coffee and pull up my car from valet and make sure my soup is warm. And I'm like, I just want to learn. So I couldn't get a job anywhere. So I decided I want to apply to grad school. So I applied to the producing program at USC, which is pretty reputable, and got in and did 2 years there. After that, the one thing they didn't teach you about was agency.
Yeah.
And everybody said that's sort of the sun of the solar system. Everything revolves around the agency.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? I want to apply. When I applied, I ended up meeting somebody from casting and Survivor, who wanted to get into the agency and was done with casting. I helped her get a job at the agency. And I said, just kind of as a fun aside, if you get me onto Survivor, I'll get you a job at the agency.
Yeah.
She's like, make a tape. And I'm like, are you serious? Make a tape. She ended up submitting it, and I started to now enter into the process.
Yes. So it was almost like some sort of like a life swap Lindsay Lohan movie that was going on, where you had a job, you were gainfully employed, you were working at the agency, somebody was in the world of Survivor, and then you switched lives.
Yeah, and she's miserable now, and I went off to have this great experience. But Lynn came up to me, and Lynn said, you know, we've always wanted to have an agency-type guy. And I'm like, well, I'm answering phones and getting coffee. But I was also on the desk of one of the most powerful guys in town. So there was a little bit of that dynamic. She liked the fact that I was dealing with difficult personalities and that I was a former athlete.
Yeah.
So I was able to kind of enter into the process, but it didn't end up working out. A couple years later, they called me back. I was now writing and producing and running around town trying to make my own magic happen. And but Lynn still liked that former agency. So when actually you look at me on the White Collar Tribe, they're like former agency assistant. And as Corinne so eagerly pointed out, that means you're unemployed. So that was kind of a funny.
Yeah. Funny aside. So does that make you a David or a Goliath?
Gosh. I mean, I think when you look at my resume, you look at the things that are sort of at the forefront of my resume, you know, having played ball, having gone to grad school twice, been at the best agency in town for a couple years.
They'd have you as a Goliath.
I think they'd have me as a Goliath. But when you actually look at my life, you look at,
well,
you know,
I think everybody,
the highs and lows.
Maybe with the exception of John Morrison, feels like that, you know, well, you know, I really am a David, but they probably would put me on the Goliath.
Yeah. I think when you look at my life now and having, you know, gone through a couple things in the last few years, I think you'd be like, man, that dude is broken and confused.
But once you're
and
a Goliath,
figure it out.
You can't go backwards, Jeff says. Once you've crossed the Goliath threshold.
All right. Well, if Jeff says it, then it's canon.
Backsies. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Santa Barbara.
Okay.
So I've been a California boy through and through. Went to grad school and undergrad at Berkeley, then went to grad school again at USC. So I'm just up and down the coast.
Okay. All right. So David versus Goliath. We had, you know, the Goliath tribe. They went to tribal council for the first time this week. And we saw a little bit of a surprise. Jeremy ended up going home. Were you enjoying the Jeremy experience?
Yes and no. I mean, one of the things that's difficult about Survivor, and especially now being a viewer, having played, is, and I think, Rob, you've mentioned this on podcasts before, you want to be entertained, right? Mm-hmm. And that was one of my struggles of playing on the show, is I was coming through many, many years of being kind of molded by the athletic agenda, being molded by people who are saying, when you lose, you applaud the other team, and when you win with class. But you keep mm-hmm. everything very tight to the vest. And when I got out there, of course, in casting, I wasn't like that. I was very much open and honest. But when I got out there and the cameras turned on, I realized, I need to be like the T-1000 from Terminator 2. Shutting this down. I don't want to make anybody laugh. I don't want anybody to know where I'm going with anything. I want them to think I'm as poised and as calm and as collective as I could be, because mm-hmm. that's going to make me untouchable. Nobody's going to have anything to say about me, and that's going to way to cruise through it.
Good use of the three C's.
Thank you. And it's also really bad TV. And so as I've learned and from watching the show is that I probably wouldn't have cast myself now looking back on it. You want to see entertaining characters beat out on the show. And I think Jeremy is that, although uncomfortable at times, especially with his interactions with Natalie. That's been really wonderful to watch. I don't think he's good at the show. And what's really sort of been a little bit of a bummer for me is reflecting back on his exit press and kind of watching how he's responding to everything in the press mm-hmm. moving forward. And sort of seeing him not taking any ownership over his flaws and failures. And I think as a life lesson as a whole, so we always talk about Survivor being a microcosm of life. But it also ends at some point. And now he's going to live the next however many years, having come off this incredible experience with incredible people. And I feel like he's not ending it well.
Yeah, he had a very interesting week on the exit interview circuit, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this with Josh in the Wiggle Room, because then Josh also got the response from Angelina in terms of what Jeremy was saying. But Jeremy was talking a lot about a supposed showmance, which ultimately ended up being the reason why he was voted out. He talked about it with us here on the exit interview. He had a prepared statement for Dalton Ross, which I think is a first in exit interview history. I don't think that anybody's ever come out with the prepared statement before. And he talked about one of the reasons, if people are not really reading all of the exit press, but he talked about in all of his exit interviews that he was talking about how that there was a showmance between John and Angelina. Angelina, of course, is married. And so he felt like that. And I was trying to pull this out of him in my conversation with Jeremy, that was it a joke that he had made and then she was mad about the joke, or was there actually something there? And he sort of left it open-ended and says, well, it depends on how you want to define what a showmance is. So I think that basically, I'm not sure if you had a showmance with how many different people on your season.
Well, it depends on how you qualify a showman.
What is the definition of showman?
For me, this is a no-mance. That's kind of where I think it's going.
Can we define showmance? Can we define what that is?
I think, haven't we talked about this before? I mean, I feel like he's trying to undefine it in order to fit his agenda of really not taking ownership of everything that he did. You got to get cuddly, right? You got to snuggle up a little bit. There's so a romantic chemistry.
So if two people are cuddling for warmth, if a man and a woman are, you know, sleeping next to each other at nighttime.
Why does that have to be a man and a woman?
Well, I guess however you want to define it.
Okay? I snuggle. If that's the case, then I had a showmance with Dan Foley almost every single night. And let me tell you, it ain't pleasant.
Well, okay. So you would not say that you had a showmance with Dan Foley,
who was also married at the time. Yes. Yes.
And so that was not a showmance.
No, that was a no-mance.
Okay. Where does showmance start? What about holding hands? Holding hands, is that a showmance?
I never saw it. Did you ever see any holding hands on your season?
I'm trying to think. Well, you know, we had in my season that Dave, there was a guy named Dave, and there was a woman named Heidi who went on to marry Major League mm-hmm. Baseball pitcher Cole Hamels. Mm-hmm. And she and he were, you know, sort of like at nighttime, they were spooning. I don't know if the term showmance had been invented yet. I don't know if I would have said that was a showmance. I kind of feel like that there needs to be a romance. Yes, that's right. So more than cuddling, there needs to be some sort of a romance, or at least a physical attraction. Physical attraction plus romance plus being on a show. I kind of feel like that's the definition.
Yeah. On my first couple of days on the White Collar Tribe, So and Joaquin, they kind of snuggled together. And I remember looking at Max in the middle of the night going, dude, we got to keep an eye on this because you never know how it's going to blossom. And as we know, two first can become really dangerous. I wouldn't have called it a showmance, but I'd call it like a blossoming into one.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think like Cole and Jess, like that starts to move in that direction. That becomes a little bit more more obvious. I just feel like Jeremy's pointing the finger at other people. Yeah, rather
the
than
showmance,
himself.
I feel like, was the hot button word, because I feel like that it seemed as though, and maybe I could be wrong about this, that the intent was to try to create problems for Angelina in her marriage. And it seemed like, based on what she said to Josh, that it seemed like that was, you know, where he was going with that. Not that he outed the fact that they had gotten close, but that there was, you know, that he was sort of talking about something that she was doing that was inappropriate.
It felt a bit egregious on his behalf. Now, I honestly think that Angelina probably...
And I love Jeremy on the show.
Right, I did as well. I just think he's not ending well. Angelina probably could have probably handled it a little bit better. Felt like she was a bit aggressive. I think we all sit back and applaud, especially people coming off these seasons where everybody in Survivor cast love each other and they travel around the world, Dirty 30, not, you know, including and all that. And now we're seeing a cast that's sort of immediately right off the bat falling apart. And people are like, yes, drama, tabloid fodder. You know, it's exciting. It started with TMZ and it's still moving on. I think she could have said, you know, it wasn't the case. You know, now it looks like she's been utilizing her Instagram a little bit more to kind of like, you know, cement the fact that she's in a great relationship. It just kind of continues to move on and on. I wish Jeremy would have come out and said, you know, I'm going to own a few things. I'm going to take it on my shoulders. I could have done things differently. The excuse making, both in Survivor and in life, especially in the midst of failure, is something that I'm kind of working through right now in my own personal life. And just, you know, I think there's something to be said about owning and growing rather than holding on and trying to clench on to trying to prove yourself.
Yeah. And in my own experience with the exit press, that I have things that I wish I could have done better in my own, you know, when I did, I don't know if you know this, that I was on Survivor All-Stars way back when, and I was the first person voted out of my tribe, and I was voted out by Boston Rob and Amber and a couple other people, and I was very upset at the time, because I felt like that I was friends with them and I felt like I didn't do anything wrong. And I felt like that I, you know, played so well in my first season. And I was really bitter when I did my exit press. And I was, you know, I was mean towards Rob and Amber, and I had a bunch of stuff that I was saying at the time that I did wrong. And I wish I could have taken back, because nobody remembers any of the stuff that I said in those exit interviews, except for probably the people that I said mean things about. So I wish I could have, done that better and just been funny and, you know, had more fun at my own expense.
Yeah. I mean, Survivor is at best 39 days and then it's over and it's done with, and life continues on. And as you guys know, who follow all of us crazies on social media, I've got some 5 or 6 of the best friends that I've ever made coming off of the show. Survivor casting does an incredible job of vetting out wonderful people that are funny, attractive, interesting, strange, weird, you know, compassionate, successful in business, from all walks of life. And it's this great melting pot. And if you actually connect with a few people, it transcends the show and can be a wonderful bonding experience. Not to pour on Jeremy so much again and again and again, but I think there's a real lesson learned here as people continue to get voted out, both now in this season and in coming seasons. Rob, you would just, I written down a couple things that you talked to him. You know, were you blindsided? You asked. No. From the very first day, or at least the first couple of days, I knew it would be me or Natalie. Do you have any regrets in the way you talked to Natalie? No. Natalie was causing so much dissension. I was the person trying to keep the peace. You're so observant. You notice every little thing. Was that informational overload? Not really. I'm really funny. You know, so there's just
he is pretty funny. I have to say
he was. I thought he was really great. So I would love to see Jeremy. I wanted to continue on. But guys, if you're coming out of the show, it's okay to be aggressive. It's okay to have tough feelings, but also, you know, try to take a step back, you know, do the wiggle room, emergency room kind of overview, and say, is this really what I want to be known for? Is this how I want to go out in the end?
Okay. So I like this. So you're coming at this almost from the agency perspective of, you know, how you know, you're handling somebody's, you know, post-show image and career. That any advice for people?
Look, I already know the listeners are going, shut up, dude. I want to see the car crash. Like, I want to see this explode. You're handling this way too maturely, wisely. It's boring. You were boring in the show. Let's get somebody else in there who's going
to
stir it up.
The people that are going to be the car crash are not listening to this. So, or they're going, you know, because that, just to go back to some, you know, infamous exit press that from your own season that Dan Foley came out. And, you know, that was probably one of the more infamous weeks of exit interview press, because he came out really hot and he came out swinging not about another player so much, but about production. And he was unhappy about his edit, and that didn't go great for him.
He got swung back on and got knocked out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the years of the show, you know, people handle the exit press in different ways.
And that's up to them. I get it. I just know what probably I would have done or what I tried to do when I got out, because I got blindsided. I think it's actually a lot easier when you get blindsided, because you're kind of like, I didn't know and I couldn't really make changes. However, when you know that it's going down that way and you could have made changes and you didn't, and now you're struggling with that fact and you're trying to rip everybody apart and trying to really, really be in concrete about how you played the game and you didn't make any mistakes, man, just own up to it and move along. That would be my advice to these people who are kind of going to be getting voted out. 19 of you are going to be disappointed. And even the one who wins, $1 million disappears, man, at times. You know, the glory will fade. I hate to say it. At some point, there will be another cast and another show. So just own it and then really try to bomb these people that you're playing the game with, because it can be relationships to last a lifetime.
Okay.
All right. Go.
All right. Let's talk about some of the other stuff going on. Let's talk about actually the David tribe. We haven't talked a ton about them so far through the podcast. Been talking a lot about the Goliaths who went to the tribal council. Now, we saw there was some fallout from the previous week where Jessica got voted out, and it looked like that Nick, specifically Christian a little bit, pushing some blame onto Gabby about that. And our first voicemail comes to us from Kieran, who wants to talk about blaming Gabby.
Hey, Rob and Tyler, it's Kieran from Maryland. I want to talk about Nick and Christian blaming Gabby for Jessica's elimination. So when the David's return from tribal council, both Nick and Christian told, I believe, Davey and B that Gabby was the reason Jessica went out. Nick continued to blame the following morning, which made Gabby a target, particularly to B. B really wanted Gabby out because of that. Tyler, my question to you is, do you think both Nick and Christian, especially Nick, made the right decision of blaming Gabby, or do you think this is going to come back to bite them?
Did you like Nick throwing Gabby under the bus?
Yeah, I mean, good call. And I think he handled it really, really well on the raft by just sort of like, hey, just kind of offering this up that it's been a little scary. But Rob, I kind of, if I'm on the outs along with those other two guys, or the two guys that were in the cold there, imagine you're them, Rob. Okay, so Nick and Christian make a move against you, and now they're trying to throw Gabby under the bus. Imagine these two boys, Nick and Christian, are your actual children. And you go to a sandbox and you say, guys, we're not going to throw sand today, no matter what happens. So they go out and play and they're running around. They're going down the slides. Meanwhile, another little toddler comes over named Gabby.
Because Christian wanted to play in the sand with Gabby.
Right. Yes. So Gabby comes over and she goes, hey, guys, we're going to throw sand tonight. Let's make some moves. Next thing you know, you look over and you see your kids throwing sand at everybody.
Yeah.
Now, are you going over and saying, hey, that little Gabby girl, we got, you know, that's intense. That's insane. That's bad. We got to scold her. Are you looking at your own kids going, we had something together and I can't really trust or understand where you're going? Is that a bad example? Well,
no, I think it's good, because what I find is that you're not really allowed to yell at other people's kids. That's frowned upon, where strangers don't want me to discipline their children for whatever reason. So I never really thought about allies on Survivor in that way, where I was their parent, because I didn't have kids when I played Survivor. But it's definitely an interesting analogy. So you think they should be more upset with the people in their alliance as opposed to, because Nick did try to sell it as like, oh my, I can't believe this Gabby. I mean,
look what happened.
Look what she did. I can't believe, could you believe how fast she turned on her friend? Oh my God. Oh, we got to get rid of her.
And if I'm on the outs, I'm going, man, if Gabby's coming after other people, she might be coming after me. Maybe there's a chance to go talk to Gabby and see where she's at if she's such a great player.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's interesting because he sort of leaves out the part of about how that he did flip. You know, it's like, oh, she made me do it. I couldn't control myself. It was Gabby. Gabby's the bad influence. Yeah, we didn't want to throw the sand, Dad. This Gabby, she's no good. I'll tell you that right now.
She's the villain of the season already with her cute little smile and quirky ways.
Let's take one other voicemail about this. This is from Ben from New Zealand, wants to talk about the throwing Gabby under the bus.
Hi, Rob and Tyler. It's Ben from New Zealand here. So, Tyler, I want to know your thoughts on Nick throwing Gabby hard under the bus. If it was me and I was Carl and B and Davey, I think I'd be more inclined not to trust Nick after that. Who's worse, the person who betrayed you or the person who not only betrayed you, but then now they want to flip back and betray their own ally? Is Nick overplaying his hand? Oh, and Rob, your beard is gorgeous, darling.
It took me two or three times listening to that. Like, how does Ben know about my bed? What is he talking about, my bed? And then, oh, beard. So thank you, Ben. I appreciate that. But so in terms of Nick, does he come across as wishy-washy potentially to these allies that he flipped against them but now is willing to flip back against? It seems like that Davey and B, they seem like they're on board with it. So, but do you feel like, is that a dangerous precedent to flip and then flip back against somebody?
Well, first of all, can we confirm that Nick was throwing her under the bus, or is this an 18-wheeler that's just continuing to go over and over and over?
Yeah.
Look, I think this is sort of what we kind of address. I mean, the flip back and the flipping and you know, the trust clusters or however you want to look at it, it's not the way that I would play the game. I would like to secure an early alliance and then just kind of continue to bulldoze people. But man, if you've been blindsided really early in the game, you got to start to think that you're on the outs and it's coming after you next.
Let me bring in this tweet from one of the listeners, Saffron. Does it pay to have a snappy alliance name, with the Mason-Dixon alliance getting all the credit for voting out Jessica, perhaps because it was easier to include them in a 15-second wrap-up soundbite? Is this what contestants should do in the future to vie for airtime and credit? Do you think that that is one of the benefits that Nick says he's going to name all his alliances? It makes it very easy in the previously on Survivor. Mason Dixon pulled it off again.
I think if you're vying for airtime and credits, that's going to be sniffed out really early. I mean, if you're out there going like, hey, dude, you like remember when we voted out Tori? Yeah, dude, that was like, that was totally like a Burr Hamilton move, man. Like that, we did that together, bro. You know, two different sides of the world. I don't think that necessarily helps. I mean, I guess in my season, teaming up with Carolyn, Mama C, I guess we could have been Mama T.
Mama T.
Or Caroler or something like that. But is that really going to help? Even you've got the connection. I think it's good for production.
Did you have any named alliances in World Apart?
No. No, although I'm the kind of guy who names everything in my life. And, you know, so I actually came up with Mama C, and unfortunately, not that I coined the term, but brought in Dirty 30. And that's sort of what we came. And I was trying to call Max. What?
I was going to say Joey Amazing. Was that you?
That was Mike Holloway. Okay. You know, and I tried to get Max to be Doc for forever. And he fought it because he was like, I don't want people to know I got a PhD. That's actually not a good Max impression. But, you know, it's that he, so, you know, you're always trying to come up with ways to kind of lighten the mood a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like Nick's trying to force it on everything. I don't think that's the end of nicknames.
Ah, nicknames. That's good.
Thank you.
I like that. You even coined a name for what Nick's doing. All right. Let's talk about Natalie, because the viewers, I think, they're with me that Natalie has been so much fun to watch on the show. We get to keep enjoying Natalie on Survivor. Tyler, are you enjoying the Natalie experience?
I am. Now, if I had to play with Natalie, I don't know. I couldn't handle it. Just the, I think the bossiness is really tough right off the bat, but it's also like, yeah, you want to bring her along. She's a shield. Mm-hmm. She's doing nothing. Rob, I want to ask you a question about kind of the Natalie-Jeremy interaction. The scene where they're kind of just really, really going after it and Kara's watching the two of them. If you were kind of in the middle of that, or actually if you were a Jeremy in the middle of that and you felt that you were being kind of called out for things that you weren't really involved in. How would you have handled that?
So you're talking about like when Natalie said she wanted to have that conversation
with
everybody.
And you're trying to scrap back into it and you need to be a part of it. And she's saying, get out of here. What do you do?
Yeah, she had said that she wanted to have that conversation with everybody. I think I have that clip.
Can I have a minute with them?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
I mean, privately without you here.
So I really liked the way that Jeremy handled that, which is like, can I have a minute with them? And he's like, sure. And then he sits down with them and doesn't sort of go through the awkward, like, oh, do you want me to leave or am I staying? What am I doing? He just like sort of parked and she's like, no, I need a minute without you. He's like, well, now that you want to be without me, now I really don't want to leave.
Yeah. And I think, and as you saw, that escalated and it continued on to his him getting completely voted out by everybody. The landslide. I think the right call is, okay, I'll leave and take off. And then kind of cruise around to everybody else who's standing around camp going, Natalie's now pushing her agenda. She's now kicking me out of things. She's bossing. She's making moves. She's much, much more of a dangerous scrambler than we ever gave her credit for. Guys, we got to be watching out for this girl. So rather than trying
That's what Jeremy should be saying.
That's what I think Jeremy should have been doing. Rather than trying to combat her square one-on-one, mano-a-mano, may the best man win, David and Goliath style, I actually think it should be, all right, you know what? I'm going to go now transition and start to do other things and make some other little waves and whispers around the rest of camp.
In fairness to Jeremy, I don't know if there's anything else he could have done because I don't know if it was necessarily what Natalie was doing that sort of changed the tide for him. I think he might have been drawing dead at that point already because it was a 9-1 vote. And I get the sense that it had more to do with what Angelina was doing and sort of that she had got everybody on board as opposed to there was anything from Natalie's scrambling that changed anybody's mind. Because we never saw Natalie have that conversation where either Natalie or Angelina, you know, strikes up a conversation and Angelina says, okay, Natalie, I'll tell you what, you want to play ball with me? You want to work with me? We will get rid of Jeremy, but I need to know that you're going to be loyal to me to the end. And unfortunately, we just didn't see it. Doesn't mean it didn't happen, but we didn't see it on the show.
Well, I got blindsided. Rob, did you know that it was coming for you? And what would you have done differently if you did?
So, in similar style to Jeremy, you know, I was the first person voted out of my tribe the second time that I played. And I think about that a lot of if, you know, what could I have done? And I don't know if at the time that I realized that it was going to be me, if there was anybody that would have changed their vote. I don't think that there was a move I could have done. Like had I known, come into the game knowing I was going to be the first person voted out on day 12 and I had 12 days to change things around, perhaps, you know, if I was more aware coming in, I could have done things differently. But, you know, I really debated that day of like, you know, asking Big Tom to know if it was going to be me that time that I got voted out. And I was like, well, if it is me, then there's nothing I could do about it anyway. So, you know, I'll just come off as paranoid. So it's probably not me. But I don't even want to, you know, bring that thought into the universe. I don't even think I knew about thinking like that at the time. But so I just was like, I'm just being crazy. And, you know, I'm being paranoid. It'll be fine. But, you know, if he did say, yeah, it is going to be you, other than just like blowing up the tribal council, I don't think there's anything I could have done. And I don't think that would have changed anybody's opinion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, fair enough. Maybe Jeremy was drawing dead. If I would have known that people were coming for me, at least had a little bit of inkling, I would have blown up camp, blown up tribal council. You would see a completely different player than the one you saw just got to go out with a whimper.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you know, and sometimes you don't know. And there's really not a lot you can do about it.
But blowing up the camp, I don't think actually, maybe there's two or three times in the history of the show where that's actually worked or done something. But
what I mean by blowing up the camp is I knew a lot of secrets that were going on.
Yes.
That I was keeping that nobody else knew, and it all would have been out.
It would
be
good TV, and then people would be like, you know, robbed G. Otis and stuff like that. But there's not a ton that you can do when people have their minds made up like that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of mind switching once you get to tribal.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded like Angelina really had it out for him. So it was what was done was done.
Okay, so let's just talk about the idea of voting out Jeremy over Natalie. Let me take this question here. This is from James from Perth.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Tyler. How are you both? This is James from Perth.
Great voice.
That's a good
Western
voice.
Australia. I just wanted to run an idea. idea past you that I had watching this week's episode in regard to boots at particularly early tribal councils. There seems to be an established trend where people are looking to get rid of the big threats early on in the game, and part of that is overlooking weaker players. And the excuse is often there's always next week to get rid of the weaker player. But it seems to me the longer a game goes, the less likely a weaker player is to get voted out, because people see them as the goat that they could take to the end, whereas a strong player, and particularly a strong player that is identified as being a threat in the first 5-6 days of the game, I find it difficult to think that they would actually be able to go the extra 30 and get to the end with everyone realizing how much of a threat they are without going on a tear. It seems. In your thoughts on that, and whether I'm overthinking it or not, or if maybe you can envisage a swing where people start to sort of acknowledge the threat of the weaker player being around too long in the early game. Ta-ta.
TTFN. So, all right. James from Perth has an interesting way of looking at this, Tyler. Is Natalie, in fact, the bigger threat than Jeremy? Because the longer she lasts in the game, the more likely she's going to be somebody that is clogging up one of those final three spots that people are going to be vying to try to get to the end with her. And is she actually a bigger threat to get to the end than Jeremy was? And is our thinking backwards to think that, oh, Jeremy can talk, that Jeremy is the bigger threat, we need to get rid of Jeremy first, when we should actually be thinking we need to get rid of Natalie first, because Natalie has a better chance of being one of those three people sitting at the end of the game?
It's like that Austin Powers quote, like, I've gone cross-eyed. You know, you can go back and forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's sort of the Sandra mentality, right? You just kind of float along, and next thing you're kind of there at the end, and you've worked up a lot of great relationships.
Well, I would say that I think it's a little bit different, and I did get that question from listeners. Chase has a call that I was going to play that is about, does Natalie have Sandra upside? I feel like that it's actually, it's subtle, but I think that this is different than Sandra in terms of that I don't know if Natalie is necessarily playing the Sandra game of, you know, with the, you know, Sandra is very cunning and is, you know, is really pushing for the, you know, I don't care who goes out as long as it's not me. And I think that she's underestimated, but I don't think that necessarily it's the same as what Natalie is trying to do.
What is Natalie trying to do?
I'm not exactly sure, but you know, she's loyal to the Goliath. So there's similarities, but I just feel like that Sandra is a little bit more by design than what Natalie is ultimately trying to do.
I think as somebody who played in a 3-tribe season to start off the bat, it's a lot easier because you have a lot less people. So it can be like, all right, we do need to stay strong because we're competing. And the only way to not get people voted out is to not go to tribal. Now, when you're 10 and 10, there's a lot more room. There's a lot more flexibility. So, you know, is Jeremy more strong than Natalie? Is Natalie more imposing than Jeremy? At the end of the day, you just got to make things better for the camp.
Mm-hmm. So Jeremy was the bigger problem for the camp for Angelina or for the tribe?
According to Angelina, and apparently everybody else went along with it. So either she's an incredibly impressive spokesman and can manipulate everybody.
Yeah, well, she
is. They all kind of agreed.
She is. I mean, did you hear what she said in the episode? That Angelina...
In my day-to-day life, I use the power of persuasion. I use it if I'm pulled over by a police officer for going a little bit too fast, for getting discounts at restaurants, whatever it may be.
Okay, so this is one persuasive individual. She is able to persuade police officers from not giving her tickets when she's pulled over for speeding.
I mean, we've seen that Dan likes to move fast with Kara. I wonder if Angelina's moving a little too fast with, you know, hot cop Dan.
Okay, so you feel like that Dan,
how's she gonna work?
That he has stopped her for speeding, and she is able to persuade him to not give her a ticket.
And so he's like, I gotta put my sights on somebody else.
The second part of this is actually, I think, more interesting.
In my day to day life, I use the power of persuasion. I use it if I'm pulled over by a police officer for going a little bit too fast, for getting discounts at restaurants, whatever it may be.
Okay. So Steven actually tweeted about this. How does she persuade discounts at restaurants? Steven tweeted, does she argue for a 20% discount on her filet mignon, or pretends she saw a fly in her soup for a free meal? Like, I legitimately have no idea what this means. Tyler, do you know how do you persuade for discounts at restaurants?
The best way I do it is I just clip a coupon in my mailer on mail on Tuesdays and submit that. I don't know. I'm not a cute 20-something girl. Neither is Stephen Fishback, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I think that's something we're just not going to be able to tap into.
We can't even figure it out. Like, does she sit down and at 7 o'clock and say that, you know what? No, I actually got here at 5 o'clock, so I am entitled to the early bird special.
This is one of the things my dad used to do growing up, and whenever he used to grow up, is he would call the pizza parlor and have them deliver to a fake address, and they'd get there, nobody'd be there. Well, then they would enter into the parlor while the guy was out delivering, and they'd just be sitting there hanging out playing video games. The guy would come back and be like, anybody want this pizza? We're going to throw it in the trash. And they'd be like, great, free pizza. Is that what she's doing? That could be an angle.
Yeah. Don't you think that you guys should be giving us a free dessert with this meal?
Here's the thing. I have a thought on who's getting better discounts at restaurants.
Who?
But we're going to enter into that a little bit later.
Okay. All right. A tease. Stay tuned later on in this podcast. All right. Back to Natalie. Let's go to Ben from Brooklyn, who wants to talk about Napalm Natalie.
Hi, Rob. This is Ben from Brooklyn. In the past, we've seen Ben bombs. We've seen Kellen bombs, and this past week on Survivor, we saw our first napalm bomb. Natalie also mentioned in the parting words to Jeremy a compliment about his skin tone. Do you think Natalie, using her business prowess, is going to take advantage of this moment to start a marketing campaign for skincare product Napalm Bomb?
Okay. I guess where I want to go with this is, napalm does not have a pleasant connotation. Somehow, Natalie has rebranded napalm to be Napalm Natalie, and people are like, yes, Queen Napalm Natalie. I mean, I wonder, are there other harmful substances that are out there that other Survivor players and reality TV show contestants can, you know, change the perception of? Like, could there be an Anthrax Anthony out there?
Oh, so you've thought this through. It's getting sprung on me. Wait, now, hold on. Is
Ebola
this,
Evan?
Is this like a napalm bomb, like a bath bomb? Or is it like a bomb, B-A-L-M, that you would apply to dry?
Well, maybe she could potentially, just completely rebrand napalm, that it's a positive thing.
Well, I love how she's like, you're getting the napalm now, but your skin looks good. I mean, doesn't napalm just essentially just melt your entire body? There's no skin left over. It's
hard to wrap your head around.
It's at least 3 degrees. Third degree burn.
She talks about napalm, and let me play the voting confessional, and then we could talk about that. This is Natalie voting out Jeremy.
You talked that brother sister love stuff, and you showed me no love. So that stinging sensation you feel in your eyes right now—that's a Natalie napalm. Get off of my island. By the way, your skin is gorgeous, darling.
Yeah. Again,
not for long. She's dropping.
The napalm's
flesh burning
very
stuff.
Unpleasant. She almost talks about the Natalie napalm like it's pepper spray. She stings like your eyes.
It stings your eyes. No. Has anybody seen? I actually had a tweet this week, and I thought it should have had more credit. That's pathetic for me to be saying. But I said, I love the smell of Natalie napalm in the morning. Mm-hmm. It smells like pre-merge. Hashtag Charmpocalypse now, as we know Charmpocalypse is now becoming a thing. I thought that was cute. I thought it was layered. I thought it was, it was sort of cheeky.
It's a funny joke.
It got no respect, Rob.
Yeah.
You didn't even like it. My favorite.
Oh, I liked it.
All right, fair enough. You liked it right now.
Yeah.
My favorite moment in that whole thing is after she makes the comment, they cut to Mike White. And he's now the next person coming up into Cass's vote. And, he kind of just like slouches in, and he's got this shirt that says, why can't we all get along? And he's like, and then he votes. It's just like a great way of just sort of like putting a little bit of an emphasis on the craziness of napalm.
Maybe he could be Michael Mace.
Oh, there you go. You still go. Is that a mace that you're swinging over your head? And you're
like it's
Braveheart?
A mace that you're like spraying on an attacker.
He's more like Michael Mayo.
Michael Mayo.
Mayonnaise Mike White.
Yeah, which some people think mayonnaise worse than napalm. In terms of unpleasant substances.
But it could, if it's napalm bomb, mayo could actually bring a lot of restoration to skin.
The mayo jar. Yeah. Since we're talking about this vote, let me bring in this question. This is from Haley, who wants to talk about how good she thought Natalie's vote was.
What's up, Rob? This is Haley calling from the Bay Area. So this week we had one of the most iconic voting confessionals of all time with Queen Natalie telling Jeremy that that stinging in his eyes was just the Natalie napalm and that his skin looked gorgeous. So what I want to know is, what do you guys think is more iconic? Natalie's voting confessional or Wendell's voting confessional? On Ghost Island. And also, do you guys agree that Jeremy has gorgeous skin? Because I think he does. Thanks.
You just got by Felicia out of that, didn't you?
Wendell was great. I think that Wendell is definitely better than the Natalie confessional, right?
Without a doubt. When I saw it, I turned to the people sitting next to me. I go, that might have been the best I've ever seen. And to be honest, Rob,
the
Wendell. I've never seen yours.
That's fine.
I've never heard it.
That's fine.
Please tell me it wasn't like anything to do with Casey Kasem, because I hear that every week.
Yes. I don't want to make it about me, Tyler. I just want to put it in comparison between Natalie and the Wendell one. And the Wendell one, I thought, you know, immediately, okay, this is one of the best of all time. I thought that the Natalie one was good, was funny, but I wasn't thinking of it as an all-timer. I mean, am I in the, you know, a small percentage on this?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's early to tell. I think when Wendell dropped the mic on Noble, we had seen them for a few weeks. We had learned to kind of like or hate or despise or love whoever you wanted to pick. And then when he dropped it down, it was a big sucker punch. It was a nice little blow to the face. So this, I feel like this is still, had we gotten to see these guys really wrestle and argue for a few weeks, it might have been more of impact.
So I was reading, Dalton Ross has an interview with Jeff Probst every week, and Dalton Ross asked Jeff Probst on EW.com, Natalie's goodbye message to Jeremy was so classic. That stinging sensation you feel in your eyes right now, that's the Natalie napalm. Get off my island, by the way. Your skin is gorgeous, darling. That leads me to ask, what's your favorite voting send-off of all time? And Jeff Probst answered that he says that he thinks that for his favorite of all time, he thinks that he wants to go back to season one. And he says that Richard Hatch, who would go on to become our first winner, stood at the voting confessional holding his parchment. And he said the name Stacy scribbled across the center. And he explained his strategy, which is obviously key to why you vote somebody out. And he said, Stacy, tough call, subtle reasons, and he put the vote in the urn. Not sure exactly what they are. And Jeff says, what I remember so well about that moment is that there wasn't the slightest hint of irony or sarcasm. He really meant it. He had very nuanced reasons for what he was doing. He just didn't know what they were. Both can exist. These are the kinds of complicated moments in human behavior that make this game so compelling. I didn't even know that was in the running for best moments.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I never even saw it to begin with.
Yeah. I guess to each their own.
Sure. I mean, look, if we're going to talk about me again, which I love to do, I got up there and held up my voting parchment and said, I have no idea what's going on. And I really didn't. But it's easy to do that when you got a necklace around your neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good. We like that.
Thank you.
All right. Let's take a question from Jake from Jersey. Wants to talk about Mr. John Hennigan.
Hey, Rob and Tyler. It's Jake from New Jersey. This week, we saw Christian talking a lot about the logistics of the Slamtonian government, and I was wondering that if all the previous Survivor players lived together in some sort of Survivor City, who would you guys elect as the mayor of Survivor City? Love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. All right. Let's circle back to this, because we have to talk about Slamtown for a little bit, Tyler, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Christian and Gabby talked about Slamtown and what was Slamtown all about. So let's just talk through this.
What are the logistics of Slamtown? I mean, I must know.
Okay, so clearly on some level, you know, being invited to Slamtowns means you have been slammed.
Okay, so according to Christian, that once you get slammed,
what does that mean?
You are invited to Slamtown.
Where are we going with it? Is this innuendo?
I don't know.
Does he want to go to Slamtown with Gabby?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
To live on separate sides of town, or
I don't know. But so you get slammed. I want to follow Christian's definition of Slamtown because he seems to know. He's a smart guy. He is a robotics engineer. Appears to be a brilliant genius. So he seems to know. He studied this.
He seems to know what getting slammed is like.
So you get slammed,
okay,
and then you go to Slamtown. Okay?
Okay.
You're obsessed.
I love Slamtown. I think that John, on the other tribe, mayor of Slamtown, is endlessly fascinating. He presumably was born and raised in Slamtown, which sounds awesome to me, but here in Wentville, where I grew up, you know, we had hard times.
So Christian grew up in Wentville, which I guess must be some sort of a rival of Slamtown.
Well, Slamtown certainly sounds better to him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but John Hennigan grew up in Slamtown. He was born and raised in Slamtown. Now, I thought you needed to get slammed to go to Slamtown. So I guess that John Hennigan's parents were slammed, and then that's how they met. And then
they slammed.
He was born into Slamtown.
John was born, right.
He was born into Slamtown. He's like Bane, where that he knew no other world except for Slamtown.
I love how you're just totally ignoring me as I just kind of chime in here with this.
No, I'm not ignoring you.
So John's
you.
Like that, those like the high school friends that you went to school with who never left. And then they're becoming like really, really bad cops and firefighters that are just like, God, why are we here? And they're like fishermen just, you know, getting drunk at 4 a.m.
I don't know. Now, I maybe he's more like you of that, you know, that where it may be because you were born and raised here in California. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Wimpville on Long Island. I had to get slammed and get here.
And now you're
a native.
Yeah, I mean, I've lived.
You're a native Slamtonian.
I've lived in a lot of different other cities. Mm-hmm.
You've left and you came back.
I did. I've got a heart for Slamtown. I never want to leave.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to hear what Slamtown is like.
You're in the Slammer, and the.
So now,
we got a Slamtown slammer? Is this the prison of the Slamtown?
So I'm not sure. Is the act of going to the slammer being slammed?
Or is it when you're in Slamtown, you do something offensive, you got hot cop, he pulls you over for going too fast. If now you're in the slammer. Angelina talks her way out of Slamtown, but everybody else is in the slammer.
She doesn't have to worry about going to Slamtown. She could talk her way out of going to Slamtown. Now, it almost sounds like by this definition of now where there's a slammer, it sounds like that John Hennigan should be the sheriff of Slamtown, and that would have alliteration if we're going to be, you know, really nitpicking it. My sheriff of Slamtown might even be better. He could have like a badge, like a star.
Do you think that Jeremy was convinced that John was trying to take Angelina to Slamtown?
That's what he should have said.
That's what he should have said.
If he would have come out and said, like, hey, look, that's the mayor of Slamtown. If you don't want to get slammed, then what are you doing hanging out with the mayor of Slamtown? I mean, that would be a scandal.
I've gone cross-eyed again, Rob.
That would be a true scandal if we were to find out that the mayor of Slamtown was in a showmance with a married woman.
All right, let me ask you this. Are you a David? Are you a Goliath? Are you a Slamtonian?
I think that... Well, we found out later on in the episode that John said that he couldn't wait to take the Davids to Slamtown. So I think that the Goliaths already live in Slamtown.
If he can't wait to take them, does that mean he wants to get them out or he wants them to come and become?
Maybe he wants to put them in the slammer in Slamtown.
Well, then he should have said that. He should have said, I want to slam them.
And all the people there is like, well, someone's got to govern these people. And they have needs.
Yeah.
So someone has overseen
them. And it's John.
Yeah.
He's the mayor. What are the citizens of Slamtown?
They're the Slamtonians.
Okay.
Christian going, they have needs.
So is the mayor of Slamtown, is he a benevolent figure? Is he beloved or does he rule through fear of Slamtown?
Are we still talking about John? Aquaman?
Yeah.
I think he, it's ruled by fear.
Why is he Aquaman? Because he's like Khal Drogo?
He looks like him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's an absolute unit. Let's not get it wrong.
Whoa.
The dude is huge.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's an athletic term. I'm not trying to slam.
I got it. So, the slam town politics, I think, are fascinating.
Are they really, though?
I think so. John said about the David tribe that he would like to see these Davids come to Slamtown. It seems like that he is open. He has an open immigration
policy
in Slamtown.
As far as we're concerned, it means how are we going to move forward to take the Davids to Slamtown at the next challenge?
So he wants to bring as many Davids as he can to Slamtown.
And what if they have children? Do the children get to come along with them?
I don't know.
Is he hiring buses to transport them?
He wants to bring people. Can they vote in Slamtown elections?
I don't know. I think if they were voting, he probably wouldn't get voted back.
I don't know. If he's the... So the question is, so based on Christian's definition, he makes Slamtown sound like it is some great utopia. People are making a brand new start. I wish I could only get to Slamtown so that I could be governed by the mayor of Slamtown and be, you know, I am a person with needs. I want to be a Slamtonian. It's much better in Slamtown than it is in Wimpville.
It sounds like communism is what it sounds like.
You think so?
It does. It sounds
Slamtown.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Even though they're voting people in, it doesn't sound like a democracy at all to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think Christian should actually just design his own Sims-like video game and just call it the, you know, Slamtonians.
Slamtonians. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good. And maybe it could be some sort of a robot uprising in Slamtown.
Sure.
Did the mayor of Slamtown run unopposed, or was there another mayoral candidate in Slamtown?
I think with the communistic society that they're living in, it was his own thing.
So he sort of appointed himself as the mayor of Slamtown.
He's the Putin of Slamtown.
Okay, don't get us in trouble. We don't want to.
I can't believe we're still talking about this.
Oh, I didn't know you didn't want to talk about this. I feel like that this is like primo Survivor voicemails material. Slamtown,
love it.
You love it?
Love
okay.
It.
All right.
It's like the Wiggle Room. It's growing on me.
Okay. We can move on. Here, let's get to that. I know you brought in a quiz for me.
Oh, I brought in a game, Rob.
Yes. Okay.
Well, more than just a quiz.
Okay. Well, let's open it up. Okay. So tell me about the game you brought in.
All right, Rob. This is a hot take game.
They don't like games in Slamtown.
This is a hot take game, Rob. Fortunately, we're not in Slamtown. We're in California, and I'm happy to be here. This game, you got to get 7 correct.
Okay.
And the way that you get something correct is I'm going to read you a hot take comment on the season thus far.
Okay.
You got as few seconds as possible. You can't be sitting there thinking and mulling it over. All right.
Okay.
You got to either hit the bell that you agree.
Like this.
Or you hit the buzzer that you disagree.
Okay.
And you got to move fast. All right. Okay.
Now, when you say that there are right or wrong answers to
that's
this,
basically agreeing with me.
Okay.
But it's my game.
But I just want to make sure I understand this. So you made up a list of 18 hot takes that you...
Napalm hot.
That napalm super hot. That you believe are true. Are some of them to trick me? Because what I'm confused about is that there are 18 takes. Am I deciding if they're right or wrong, or you're deciding if they're right or wrong?
I've already said that they're right.
Okay.
And I'm trying to connect with you.
They are all right.
They're all right in my world.
Okay. So you are grading yourself?
Basically, you've got as few seconds as possible mm-hmm. to either agree or disagree with my hot takes. If you get 7 out of the lucky number 7 out of the 18 correct, we win a huge prize.
Okay, so you have made 18 takes, and you want to make sure that I agree with 7 of them.
Yes.
Can I agree with more than 7?
Then we win double prizes.
Then we win double prizes. Okay. Yeah. All right. But there's a time limit?
Well, there can be. I mean, if you want to, I don't want you sitting over here like contemplating stuff.
Yeah, I won't hem and haw, be a fancy fencerton. I can just, you know, go through as fast as possible.
I'm going to read these quickly because I want you to just kind of.
All right. Should I close my eyes?
It's Rorschach hot take.
Can I keep my eyes open?
You can do whatever you'd like.
Okay.
Let's get 60 seconds on the clock. Wait, there's no timer. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Ready?
Ready.
Okay. There is no reward worse on Survivor than soaking wet comfort. Davey's real name is David, but Jeff made him change it because it would be too confusing. Natalie has a white scarf, yet wears it over like a graduation gown. This is doubly dumb. The mayor of Slamtown's new nickname should be Peanut Butter and Slam. Green Eggs and Slam. Slam Chop. Slam Chowda. Slam Alana Ding Dong. Wham Bam. Thank you, Slam. Slammy Sosha. Ooh, Pat is the New York Dan Foley. If Bradley and Donathan had a baby, it would be Nick. Gabby looks like an adorable animated fish and excitingly overacts just like Kellen. Dr. Allison studies the science of invisibility. B's name should be pronounced how it's spelled because she'll soon be going bye-bye. Natalie saves more money at restaurants than Angelina because senior citizen discount. Mike White is whiter than me.
I don't know if that's possible.
You don't know the difference between a cyclone and a typhoon either. How many we get?
I was supposed to be counting?
I was trying to count.
Okay. A lot, though. A lot.
It's. Yeah. It's a lot.
All right. Good quiz. Good 18 question quiz of hot takes.
We breezed through it.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, I like the prepared material.
Well, I mean, somebody's got to do it around here.
Yes. Yeah. I've just been lollygagging, waiting for you to get here.
I appreciate it. No, I thank you for opening the door.
Yes. Okay. All right. I just take a nap until the guest shows up, and then we go. All right. Let's talk a little bit about Jeremy and the gameplay here. This is a question. This came to us from Stephen Callahan on Twitter. Tyler, how do you distract yourself from getting too caught up in the paranoia, seeing everyone have these side conversations? Jeremy struggled with this. Just wanted to know if you had any practical advice for anyone that finds themselves in this position in the future.
It's really tough. But I think for me, it was just trying to play it cool, man. That's not something I do really well. Mm-hmm. But I knew I needed to connect one-on-one with people. And it wasn't about necessarily how they were connecting, because I just had to be confident in the things that I was doing. Easier said than done out there. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like, you know, it's one of the reasons why Survivor is so tough to consume in 40 whatever minutes, is because the nuance of relationships. You know, Rob, suddenly you and I are on the beach and you're, you know, sniffly a little bit. You're, you know, as you are kind of in your day-to-day life, you're struggling through it. And I come over and go, what's going on? I really miss Nicole. Hey, buddy, let's go take a walk on the beach. Let's talk about our lives, our home lives. Let's catch up. You're going to share with me. That's boring TV, Rob. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, we're forming a connection that when you then go off, because we've now cried and you've cried on my shoulder and you've hugged me and you've held me probably for a little bit too long. Mm-hmm. Now you go off and go talk with, Fiona in the corner. I'm not really worried because I felt like we've had something that was really meaningful and special.
Right.
So that's a long way to say you got to connect with everybody. And, you know, Jeremy, he actually came out in the exit interviews and said, I wasn't trying to strategize. I didn't have anybody to strategize with. I was completely free. I had no alliance. And I'm going, dude, we're 9 days into the game. Are you misplaying this a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you think that it's all about creating these relationships and being comfortable enough in these relationships so that when you see Tyler having a side conversation with Fiona, that you feel like, okay, well, he's just talking to her, but we're good.
Yeah.
You know, that you feel comfortable enough that you can see somebody having that sort of conversation.
Or if you're going to be the one going off and having those conversations, you go where nobody else can see. Like, hey, go meet me around the tree back there, Fiona, in about 2 minutes. And we're going to talk where nobody else can see us and get paranoid.
Right. Now, we saw that Jeremy went and looked in the jacket for Dan's idol. Did you look in anybody's garments for an idol?
I did, and it was shown. I got into Dan Foley's bag and pulled out an advantage that he was hiding from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I got into it a lot. It was
in like a big case, right?
It was in a big case that he had hidden in his bag. He had asked Sierra to kind of stand guard over it. She fell asleep over it in a hammock, and I came back carrying firewood. I'm like, wait, what's this right here? And like, if he's telling other people about it and he's not telling me, that's no good. And so while she was asleep, I grabbed it and checked it out and kind of learned what it was, and I was able to confront him about it later. Yeah, he wasn't telling me anything. So
was he mad?
He didn't know it was me. I just kind of asked him, like, yo, what's going on with that, with the advantage? And he's like, I can't tell you. That's part of the advantage.
Yeah. Well, remind me, because he bid on it at the auction.
He won it at the auction.
And so you guys knew he had something, but you didn't know what it was. And you looked in his bag to see what it was.
Dan and I were starting to form a relationship because this was after the merge. And I asked Dan, like, you know, what's going on? You got to tell me. He said, that's part of the rules, is that I can't share it with you, which is ridiculous because in Survivor, there really are no rules.
Yeah.
And then I learned later he had told a couple other people. And then I was like, if people are learning about this and it's not me, I got to make moves to find out. I got to make moves to have it be about me.
Mm-hmm. How is Dan doing? Do you keep in touch with Dan Foley?
I do. I was just with Dan. I was with Dan 2 weeks ago for Joey Amazing's 30th birthday. He flew out from Maine.
Happy birthday, Joey Amazing.
It was my... He doesn't need more laud. It was me, Mike, Sierra...
was that a big one? Because it was the literal dirty 30 for Joey Amazing?
It was dirty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We actually kept it pretty low-key. But it was fun. It was actually fun. We watched the episode. Everybody had seen it except Dan.
Which one?
This was the premiere.
Okay.
We actually sat down. We'd all seen it once, and Dan hadn't seen it. And as we're watching it, I go, Dan, you know, there's a character on the show that reminds me a lot of you. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see him. He's this guy named Pat. And he's a guy who kind of rubs everybody a little bit the wrong way. But at the end of the episode, you're going to see that everybody is really taken by him. You know, we cut as he's getting medevaced and Gabby's crying and like, maybe Dan wasn't that bad after all. Mm-hmm. Or maybe Pat was a little Freudian slip.
Yes.
And he's like, okay. So we start watching the show and we're kind of getting into it. I'm like, see how he's like kind of coming across as, because Dan had the famous line, like, bamboo is hollow. I am a fat guy. Yeah. Right. And I'm like, see, Dan, he's kind of like bossing everybody around and telling him what to think and how to do it. And he's just sitting in silence. And at the end of the episode, I'm like, see, Dan, they all love him, just like we all love you. And he turns to me and he's like, and I can just see him fuming. I'm like, I didn't read that one correctly. So
Dan, he was mad.
He wasn't too happy about it.
He'd want to be.
Well, this is part of the Danisms that we love and also have to deal with on a day to day, week to week basis.
He's hard to predict.
He's not hard to predict. He's just the self-awareness is just, it's a tough pistachio nut to crack.
Yeah. But does he still enjoy the show? He's not somebody that he feels like he had like a negative experience with the show.
I mean, I think he had a negative experience with the show for sure. I mean,
does he enjoy the show still or no?
I think he's sort of into it. He watches occasionally. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a few episodes back, you know, having the edit that I had, which was relatively benign.
Because he was a big fan also,
right? He was a huge fan.
Yeah.
He traveled, 12,000 miles around the globe. When I interacted with people for the few months not a year, but after the show, people come up to me and say, hey, we thought you were dangerous. We thought you could win. I can't imagine the sort of response that people like Dan Foley and Will Sims got. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. It really can be very difficult, which is why I want to encourage people when they come out to not necessarily stir the pot unless you have to, you know, play the above board game, because it's going to mean a lot more if you can let it go. Dan was incredibly, not to go too much insider baseball, but after that reunion show where Jeff cut to the tape, Dan was incredibly, I've never probably seen anybody more angry or upset in the green room afterwards. They had to bring in security to kind of make sure he wasn't going to do anything. And the psychiatrist actually came in to try to talk to him.
Yeah.
Okay. It was tough.
Yeah. All right. Well, happy to hear he's in good spirits.
He's doing a lot better. And I think we all learn. We all grow. You know, we all. It's been four years since we were on the island.
We're all growing.
I feel like we should just kind of get a little Survivor community and we'll all just kind of get together.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know what we're going to name it, right?
Slamtown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. So you think that all the Survivors should move into one combine and we're going to call it Slamtown?
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you this.
Is John Hennigan the mayor of Slamtown then? Yeah,
I think Penner would be a good mayor.
It would be a humble civil servant.
Now, if we do have a slammer in the Slamtown.
Yeah.
Are we going to go there?
Nope. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I don't want to live in the Survivor commune. I mean, do we bring our families? Because let me tell you this right now. My wife is not going to like it in Slamtown.
And is that something that you're okay with?
What? That she's... That,
I mean, maybe a little bit of a vacation from the wife and the kids in Slamtown?
Oh, so I am going to Slamtown and then... I mean, it would make it easier to book the podcast. I'm not going to lie. But that overall, I just feel like that this is not really where I want to set up shop.
If you had a nickname, a room in your house,
mm-hmm.
Slamtown, which room would it be?
Boy, if I had the nickname, maybe the kitchen. I feel like I'm slamming a lot of drawers in there. I feel like working out a lot of angst. Mm-hmm. Like, what? We're out of eggs?
That's about right what I expected.
Yeah. What? No almond milk? Slam the refrigerator.
Yeah, there's nothing that makes you more angry than like a lack of almond milk in the fridge.
Well, sometimes, you know, I'm on a tight schedule here, getting ready for the next podcast, and it's like, I thought we had this. You know, my kids go through a lot of stuff. They eat everything, you know, to take one bite of something, leave it out, you know, it's, you know, a lot.
There's an almond milk drought here for sure.
All right. Speaking of the mayor of Slamtown, let's take this question from Sammy.
Hey, Robin Tyler, this is Sam from Thousand Oaks. I wanted to talk to you guys about the Monday Night Delight, the George Bushy of Tushy, the one and only mayor of Slamtown. I think coming into the season, no one gave John a real chance, but through three episodes, seeing how strong his social game appears to be, where do you put his chances at now? Assuming he makes it to the merge, do you think his social connections will be enough to insulate him from being the first one voted off post-merge? Also, in this tribe swap or in the future, if he gets into an alliance with Nick, what do you think their alliance name will be? Do you think John will be able to gain some political clout and move up from the mayor of Slamtown to become the governor of Kentucky? I'll do your thoughts. Thanks.
The governor of Kentucky. I don't know if that sounds like a prestige. Like, hey, I'm the governor of Kentucky out here.
Yeah, I thought we already nicknamed him Slammy Sosa.
Okay. That's John's new nickname.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Do you feel like, you know, he's been a great character, been a fun narrator of the show, but are you seeing John as somebody that you think has the upside to go all the way?
It's tough when you're an absolute unit. I think people after a while, especially you get to that merge, you're looking at just the sheer size of these guys. I mean, he's probably, I don't know, what did you think, Rob? Maybe the biggest guy we've ever had on the show. Garrett was big. James were big. And it wears on you. People ask me, Ty, what was the toughest part about being on the show? Was it not sleeping? Was it, you know, the mental gymnastics of dealing with weird, difficult people? For me, it was the starvation. I became a sloth out there. I had no, I couldn't, and I wasn't yoked like these guys. I was thin. I was muscular. But man, once it starts eating into your muscles, you're screwed. You're screwed. Yeah. And I think it just by a sheer amount of size.
It doesn't seem like this is bothering him.
It doesn't right now. Day 9?
Yeah.
On day 9, I cried. I stood out, watched the sunset, and go, why am I here? I don't need to be here anymore. Little did I know, I had, you know, you still got a month. A month! It's the show is brutal. I was able to fight through it.
So you think that he might hit a wall?
Well, either he's going to hit a wall, or somebody's going to start just looking around and going, after the merge, we don't need these big old jack guys around. They're going to win everything in individual immunity anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think he's been very good. I mean, I don't see any signs of him slowing down. I mean, I think he seems like he's in a really good spot where he seems like he's well-liked. But I think at the same time, I think he's underestimated. I think that people are looking at him as a little bit like two-dimensional as the mayor of Slamtown. But we hear in his confessionals that he seems like he is being kind of thoughtful about the game and where it's headed. And so I think that I definitely, if we were going to have a draft today, in terms of, you know, who could win, I think he would probably go in the first four or five picks.
I just found it ironic that he's like, I'm going to be a real guy. I'm going to try to connect with everybody. But every confessional and every time he's interacting with anybody, he's talking about wrestling. He's talking about slamming people.
He's talking about wrestling, I think, with people on the show. But I think in his confessionals, he's talking a little bit more about, you know, having conversations with people.
Right, we're not seeing that.
Okay. All right. So we'll see. But I think that he's done better than expected. I thought that he would be sort of like, you know, a cartoonish bad guy a la like a John Rocker early on. And that has not been the case.
So if you had it was a pick 'em, right? You got Slamtown versus Hibiki, you know, where are you going?
I would take Christian, but I think he's probably like the number one or number two pick off the board.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, I think that if let the mayor of Slamtown fall past 5 in your draft at your own peril.
Okay. I've never played fantasy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So that's not something that's interesting to you at all?
This is what I played real football.
Let me just say that I play fantasy football, but we don't play with a kicker. Okay. All right. So
you're missing out.
Touche.
I can't reach the bell. That's not fair.
You don't get your own bell.
Here you go. I play real football, Rob.
Yeah. Okay. What is that? You're just tapping on stuff. Okay. That's like Slamtown. All right. This is a question that is coming to us all the way from Israel. Okay. Let's talk about the hidden immunity
this
idol.
This is the home of David and Goliath.
Hey, Ram and Eric. What's good? Nati from Israel here. I noticed that hidden immunity idols this season look really plain. Just a couple of seashells and a string. This is presumably so that it's more difficult to differentiate between real idols and fake ones. But I was thinking, what if someone like Davey makes a fake idol that looks exactly like the one he has, brings it to Tribal and plays it? Will Jeff be able to tell if the idol is real or not? How?
All right. So we have gone to a point in Survivor where we're making the idols look so crappy that people will be confused. Is this a real idol or is this a fake idol? Could Davey now make a fake idol that looks exactly like the real idol and even fool Jeff Probst?
I mean, I hate to pull back the curtain here, friends, but there are cameras around. They are filming at all times. Okay. Pretty sure producers are going to let Jeff know what's real or not real.
So if there is a doppelganger fake immunity idol that looks exactly like the real hidden immunity idol
that nobody saw being fashioned together in the confines and darkness of the evenings.
All right, so that
it's a David Wright. He went out from the middle of the night.
Okay,
put it together.
Production knows about it. So now we have the real idol, and now we have a doppelganger of the real idol, which is a fake idol. Both are in Davey's bag. He gives somebody the fake idol to play. That person, or he gives somebody the real idol to play. That person plays it in a way that does not work to Davey's advantage. Davey says, hey, guys, actually, that was the fake idol. I gave the fake. I had the real one the whole time.
So Jeff is not a part of this at all.
Well, this happened to the tribal council. And now I feel like you got a real quagmire on your hands. Giggity.
Oh, but this is before Jeff has actually confirmed or denied?
Yes. That he stands up. Actually, I just want to say that was not the real idol. This is the real idol.
Okay, so we're taking Jeff out of this completely. That's what's bothering me, where somebody said, God doesn't know what's going on with his children right now.
Okay, so God knows. God,
thank you. Okay.
God knows. But somehow Davey has made an exact replica of the crappy-looking immunity idol that he has found.
I think it could be fun.
Would they stop him and then like, hey, hold on. That's like you're making counterfeit money. Okay, it looks too much like the real idol. Shut it down. Would they stop him before we got to that point?
I don't know. I mean, we've never seen this
before.
It's
like, who's the real Captain Kirk? What do we do?
I thought Hubecki
shoot
was
both of them.
I thought Hubecki was the Captain Kirk.
He's Captain Kirk?
I thought that's what you were doing with Wiggler the other day.
Oh, the impression. What would they do in that scenario?
I think the world explodes. I don't know. I think it's
they end the show.
The doppelganger thing is never. It's like, oh, Bizarro idol? Is this what we're getting to?
I don't know.
I don't think it's ever going to happen.
I mean, if you make the idols so much that they look handmade, where the contestants can then, photocopy them.
So if we had a Dr. Mike, Lauren Rimmer, like shell with a freaking string.
Right. If someone were like, who's to say, like, maybe we need to go back to Barcode Island where we need the real Survivor. We need like a little hologram on there to show, okay, this is an authentic, like a baseball, like, you know, if you have a sports memorabilia, anybody has like a baseball. Oh, this was signed by John Rocker, this baseball. Like, oh, really? Well, where's the hologram?
If Jeremy were to go to if Alex were to go to Barcode Island and take his voting parchment and it read Jeremy.
Yes.
Would that pan out? Would he get a confirm or deny there?
We don't know.
It seemed like it was 9-1.
Mm-hmm.
He put down Jeremy.
Yeah.
I think I guess Barcode would have confirmed it.
Yeah. On that note, Matthew M. sent us a tweet with the tribe swap coming up with uneven tribes or one person left out. Will they go to Kiosk Island? What's your prediction / twist advantage for the potential left out person? Okay. So the swap is coming up.
Right.
Do you think that they are going to do two tribes and then somebody is going to be going to Barcode Island?
They could be. Better take that Jeremy vote. Still upset about that, but we went through. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Alex held up his vote, and it said Jeremy, not Jeremy. Jeremy.
How do you spell that?
Jeremey.
Okay. Well, I mean, Alec is probably not.
Was it Alec?
What would you say, Alex?
I said Alex.
Okay, so now you're guilty of it.
Am I screwed up?
I believe it's Alec.
Let's take both names, the barcode. We'll figure that out.
We'll figure it out. So do you think that we will send somebody to some sort of barcode island, ghost island, redemption island? Well, not redemption island. Exile island.
Off to a boat with Cochrane.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a know-it-all question. I can't think that far in advance.
Yeah.
What do you think they're going to do? Are they going to split it evenly and have some lone
The thing that's free agent? Been kicking around in my mind is maybe...
Kickers. Now you're about kickers.
Yes.
Thanks.
Maybe is B not going to be okay? And yeah. Then will we have an even number by the time we get to the tribe swap?
You mean bye-bye.
Right.
Bye-bye.
It takes
you one to maybe, depends on how bad the grade of a sprain is, 1 to 3 to 4 weeks of doing nothing for an MCL sprain to really kind of come back and heal.
I am well-versed in MCL injuries.
You've had some knee problems?
No, but I'm a
of course you didn't.
Devonta Freeman fantasy football owner. So I've seen it all.
Mm-hmm.
Owning and keeping Devonta Freeman has aged me 3 years.
So the second you saw that happen, you saw Devonta, you saw B, and your heart sank.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So, I also own Leonard Fournette, so it's a thing. All right, let's talk about this voicemail. This comes to us from Taylor from Boston. Wants to talk about Christian in the immunity challenge this week.
Hello, this is Taylor from Boston. I have a question about the immunity challenge. My wife and I thought it was so funny. They're doing the puzzle, and Christian is like, "It's a hypothesis." And I'm a math nerd, but Becky hates math. And even she was like, does he mean hypotenuse? Right. So we thought it was so funny, but I didn't see a single tweet about it, which I thought was so strange. Like, are we just nerds? Did this not happen? So I guess that's my question. Christian totally said it's a hypothesis because it was in subtitles. But do you think he actually meant hypotenuse? Like knowing which side of the triangle is the hypotenuse helped them put together the whole pyramid puzzle. More importantly, why doesn't anyone else think this is funny? It's so funny! Thank you for answering this very important question.
Yes.
Rob, I've only seen the episode once. I thought he said hypothesis.
Hypothesis, yeah, yes.
Was I wrong? And that had me scratching my head.
Okay, so Taylor and Becky were laughing their heads off about Christian saying hypothesis. Did he mean hypotenuse since he was working on some sort of geometric puzzle? Let's go to Christian working on the four-piece puzzle.
What if it's something that...
I was wrong.
No, it was not. He did not say hypothesis.
I thought he said hypothesis, and I'm going, what is... All right.
Yeah.
We went to the tape. Thank you.
I think he meant hypothesis. I think that he had an idea of what to do next, and Gabby might have said something like, okay, great, that's it. And I think that he's saying, well, it's a hypothesis, not hypotenuse.
What if it's something that... I'm sorry, it's a hypothesis.
You know, she's asking him a question. I can't make out. It's, indistinguishable what she's saying. But what if it's a something? And he's saying, well, it's a hypothesis.
I mean, don't you normally enact a hypothesis, a scientific theory, before you enter into the actual...
Well, he was ready to do the experiment. I don't think he meant hypotenuse. I was thinking the same thing, if it's any consolation to Taylor. But I think he meant what he said.
What if it's something that...
I'm sorry, it's a hypothesis. But, I mean, it's just a hypothesis.
I mean, Rob, here's the way I look at it. It's a hypothesis. You and I are going to be boxers, okay? We're entering into the ring.
We're
going to slug it out. I know. I don't want you to sprain your MCL.
Yes.
We're going to slug it out.
You've got like a 10-inch reach
advantage.
And
we have this hypothesis where if I swing and hit you, you'll go down. If you swing and hit me, we'll go down. Well, in the middle of the fight.
To slam town?
In the middle of the fight, if I'm swinging and you're swinging, we're not there stopping in the middle to understand hypotheses. Right? That's already been determined. Yes, if I hit Rob, he'll go. If he hits me, we'll go. We're not trying to figure it out mid-action.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Rob.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's mid-action. I don't like it.
In media res.
He should have just said, it's a good guess.
Beats me. I guess let's try it. All right. Before we go any further, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor here. Those are our friends over at betonline.ag. Now, you are, you've been mocking my football knowledge, but for the second time this season, I have gone 5 for 5 in my football picks in the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge. How about that?
Are there...
Yeah, I play against the other Podcast One hosts, beating Shaq, beating Adam Carolla, a whole bunch of people that, you know, talk about football. I'm in second place right now in the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge, which you can follow along on Podcast One Sportsnet. And because of that, they are going to be crediting the people at betonline.ag $100 to 5 lucky listeners who tweet out their betonline.ag account number and the hashtag Sportsnet Challenge. Let me quickly give you my picks for week number 6, okay? This is not, well, I'm not going to, I know I'm holding them out, Tyler's starting to grab them for me. I'm not going to literally give them to you.
Because I was gonna change it.
I am going to say them on the podcast. Don't try to take my paper away
As long
me.
As you're taking into account the kicking game and special teams, it's third of the game, take into account
to.
It.
You
Let's
got
go.
To. Okay. Real quick, Vikings over the Cardinals. Give me the Texans over the Bills. Give me the Bengals over the Steelers. Steelers could play in Slamtown. The Bears over the Dolphins
nope.
and the Packers over the 49ers. Packers don't have a good kicking game. That's a concern.
One guy has one bad game and everybody's up in arms.
Yeah.
He's one of the best kickers in the history of the game. Let him go.
Yeah.
Let him go.
Yeah. All right. So be sure to follow along over on Podcast One Sportsnet. Of course, if I win, betonline.ag will be donating $5,000 to the charity of my choice, coming directly from betonline.ag. And if people have any suggestions, you know, I'm in second place right now, so it could be time to start thinking about which charity could be getting that money. Of course, all courtesy of betonline.ag. October means one thing, that's sports excitement, whether it's the NFL, college football, and now MLB playoffs. Every pitch, every swing, every play is important. Don't miss any of the action and fun. Head on over to betonline.ag today to make your online wagers and take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use promo code podcast1 to sign up for a 50% bonus today. That's podcast1 to receive a 50% sign up bonus at betonline.ag. The biggest names, the biggest teams, the biggest moments are happening all month long in October. The MLB playoffs, NFL and college football. BetOnline is your online sportsbook expert and your exclusive partner of the Podcast One Sportsnet. So use promo code podcast1 with that 50% sign up bonus at betonline.ag. And again, these picks are just my hypothesis for what is going to happen in week 6 of the NFL. All right, Tyler, let's get back to the questions. Okay, this is a good question. This is from Keith from Minnesota.
It better be.
Keith from Minnesota has a question about in the challenge.
Would he take the Vikings over the whoever's?
I think he would. Vikings over the Cardinals. That's a pretty safe pick. All right. This is from Keith.
Hey, Robin Tyler. This is Keith calling in from Minnesota. I have a question in regards to guest commentary during the challenge. He said while Elizabeth and Carl were working on the ropes in the challenge that they had been working with ropes their entire life, which I was very confused by. Elizabeth, maybe she's farming, but isn't Carl a truck driver? Do truck drivers have a lot of ropes involved in their work? I found that commentary very perplexing. So please just let me know, and thanks.
Tyler, did you catch that during the immunity challenge when it came down to, you know, throwing the ropes that Jeff had this to say?
Carl and Elizabeth have worked with ropes their whole life.
So, Carl and Elizabeth have worked with rope their whole lives.
I mean, maybe Elizabeth has, but hasn't John worked with ropes? He's been up against
them. He's been on the top ropes.
From time to time.
Yeah, lots of ropes in Slamtown.
I don't know. Jeff, he's good at what he does. Occasionally he gets it wrong. Let's just give him the benefit of the doubt.
Give him the benefit of the doubt. All right. Carl and Elizabeth worked with ropes their entire lives. All right. would I have an advantage if I worked with like wires and stuff? Like, a lot of times, like, there's a knot tying challenge. Like, Rob has to untie wires all the time. They get tangled.
Rob's got two microphones and a headset wire. What's he going to do?
All right. Here's a question. This is from Kyle from Dallas. Wants to know about something that he heard Natalie say in the episode. Here's Kyle from Dallas.
Hey, Robin Tyler, it's Kyle from Dallas. Now, Natalie had just declared her prowess in softball, and I was wondering if you could go through the Survivor softball team, because we know Lauren Rimmer's already playing center field. So I was also thinking maybe Stephanie LaGrossa, possibly, just because she has a resemblance to Stephanie Morgan from Backyard Baseball, and also Alicia Callaway, because she has a resemblance to Joe Cinda Smith. But what are your thoughts? Can you go through the lineup? Thanks.
I don't know if we should field the whole lineup, but this is what Natalie had to say about softball in the episode.
Guess what? I'm not just going to stand still and take the punch. I was a softball player. And I still play softball. I'm on a women's softball team, so trust me, I can throw some low balls.
Okay. Two things. I like that Natalie starts laughing at I play softball.
Guess what? I'm not just going to stand still and take the punch. I was a softball player.
Don't really know why that's funny.
But if she stood still to take a punch, that'd be a bad hypothesis. You don't want to be doing that in the middle of the fight.
Yeah, that's one way to ticket to Slam Town, but...
And I still play softball. I'm on a women's softball team, so trust me, I can throw some low balls.
Okay. Is throwing low balls... is that a thing? Is that a thing?
Why? What's with the low balls?
I don't know. I mean, to me, I kind of feel like you lowball when you know, like, hey, how much you want for that condo in Slamtown? I'll give you $30.
Typically in baseball, you throw a high ball, keep them guessing, but you throw
high and tight.
You throw a low blow.
Yeah, that's a low blow, but it's like, hey, what do you? Hey, that pitch at the knees, that's uncalled for.
Jatia threw rice.
Yeah. But, you know, you could throw a low ball. Maybe in softball because it's underhand and you're not supposed to throw low. I mean, is that frowned upon to throw a low ball?
I mean, does it really matter when it's women?
I mean, because it's kind of like a looping arc.
No,
you know?
No.
Oh, and that's,
no,
in fast,
no,
there, she plays
fast pitch.
She plays fast mm-hmm. pitch. Does she specify? She could be on like a co-ed sort of a
she
Sunday.
Plays, she plays women's
Guess
softball.
What? I'm not just going to stand still and take the punch. I was a softball player. And I still play softball. I'm on a women's softball team.
Women's
so
softball team.
Trust me, I can throw some low balls.
Women don't play in sort of like a. There's no women's league that's sort of like a
sure
underhand, slow pitch.
But if you're a woman and you know
she's a senior citizen.
If you're a woman and you don't have the things down, like how much is a low ball really gonna?
Sure, it's hard to hit a pitch at the knees.
I'm just saying, is it that really that scary though?
You know, they say that the low ball is tough to hit. You know, a lot of batters hit under 200 on that low strike. But then I don't know, maybe is it, what's the launch angle like in women's softball these days?
Well, here, let's draw it up. Here's my hypothesis.
Who else is on the softball team?
I like Jatia. She knows how to throw.
Jatia. She could throw the rice.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who else? Could Sierra Dawn Thomas? Could she throw the rock?
I don't think so. I think she's barrels and horses.
Barrels and horses.
That's
no.
That's it.
No.
You know, Dawn threw her teeth.
Okay. All right. Well, if there are any women listeners out there that want to get on the Survivor softball team, is this in Slamtown? We have some sort of women's softball team. Who do they play?
Is it the women's softball team in Slamtown within the Slammer? So it's kind of like a longest yard type thing. We were going to bring the outsides to fight the inmates.
I mean, if they hit a home run with the bases loaded, is that sort of, one of the most popular things that you could see in Slamtown?
It goes over the wall.
Are they the Slamtown Slammers?
It goes over the barbed wire wall. Nobody can get a ball back. The game is over for
mm-hmm.
months.
Yeah. Okay.
You need a couple packs of cigarettes to get a new baseball girl.
Mm-hmm. All right. So looking forward to watching the Slamtown Slammers
Remember
play
an NBA
some
Jam?
Home games.
Remember an NBA Jam when he's on fire and you'd shoot and the ball would be on fire? Mm-hmm. You think when Napalm Natalie pitches, it's just got this rip-roaring
Is she
smoke
the pitcher?
Trail?
Is she the, she's the pitcher on the Slamtown
well,
Slammers?
Well, we already know Lauren can throw, so she's definitely in center field.
Well, she's in center field,
tossing
yeah.
rocks.
She's tossing the rock in center mm-hmm. field. All right. This was something that was said in the episode by Mr. Mike White that a lot of people had some questions about. I'm going to start here with Brent the Shower Man had a question about a Mike White quote from this episode. Here is BTSM.
Hey, Tyler and Rob. This is Brent the Shower Man. Through three episodes, we've heard Mike White say some interesting lines in confessionals. He was hoisted by his own petard in episode one.
Hamlet.
And this week, he talked about walking down the primrose path.
Also Hamlet.
Thanks to Google, I found out that both of these quotes are actually from Hamlet.
Beat you to it, homie.
Do you guys think that we'll see him drop more of these literature bombs throughout the season? And do you think that he'll stick with Hamlet or eventually move on to other works by William Shakespeare? Thanks. Bye.
Okay. All right. So what do you think? Is he just going to give us a Hamlet per episode?
Well, he's two for three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was.
I mean, some of them might get cut.
They might. Yeah, that was an observation I had as well. I think this is part of the, if you got a really great nickname, if you got a really good take, you're going to be on TV. I think this is Mike White, but he's also a writer. So it's kind of a cute little cheeky thing to sort of pour into his personality a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Mike White, keep doing you, man.
I have another question for you, Tyler, about the Primrose Path. And let's bring in our good friend, Miles Nye, with a question.
Hi, Robin, Tyler. This is Miles. I'm calling from Truckee, California today, so I don't have my Dictionary of American Slang with me. But if I recall correctly, taking someone down the Primrose Path is an expression that means to trick them. It's like taking them on a wild goose chase. When Mike says he's not sure he wants to take Jeremy down the primrose path, is he using some other meaning, like hoist with his own petard? Does he mean he's not ready to walk down the aisle with Jeremy? Is primrose path an allusion to Katniss Everdeen's sister from The Hunger Games? Thank you. Goodbye.
Okay. So, Tyler, Miles has a question of, did Mike White use the term primrose path incorrectly? Okay, let me play you the soundbite from the episode, and then we can talk about that.
Jeremy, the more you get to know him, you realize there's a real person of depth there who has seen a lot and done a lot. But I think Jeremy being like a little sneak and finding idols in people's jackets, it just makes him look like he'll do anything for the money. So I'm kind of afraid to go down the primrose path with Jeremy. I'm just a little afraid that he's going to be his own worst enemy down the line, and I don't want to be taken down with Jeremy.
Okay. He is afraid to go down the primrose path with Jeremy. And according to my Google search, well, what do you think? You think he used it correctly?
I think he did.
Okay. So according to Google, that the primrose path, the pursuit of pleasure, especially when it seems to bring disastrous consequences. If the hypothesis is that Mike White is worried about going down the path that looks good, but it could be problematic for him, then I think that he, in fact, got it.
Got it.
Think he got it.
I think he got it, too. I liked it.
So
I actually really like that confessional from Mike, just to get back to gameplay. I think it's really astute. I think the easy thing would be, I really bonded with some guy and I got to find a way to fight for him if he's on the bottom and stick up for him amongst everybody else. He's realizing that he's kind of shady. He's tricky. Jeremy's not somebody I probably want to hitch my cow to.
It could be problems.
That was a bad example. It could be problems. It's not going to be all primrosy.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually thought that Mike sort of cutting the cord, so to speak, cutting the rope, was a really great move.
Has he worked with rope all of his life?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Tyler, let me ask you this question, and please forgive me whoever asked it, but I cannot find the person that asked the question. But you played in a season with a white collar, blue collar, no collar, and you know, as arbitrary as those things might have been, you know, it was the kind of thing where it's like, okay, I am a white collar person, and then you had a tribe swap. And so as opposed to playing on a season where it's like, okay, you're the purple tribe and you're the orange tribe, did that make there be any more resistance in terms of flipping from one tribe to another? Because I know flippers never win. But in terms of working with people from the other tribe, that you got this distinction of you're this type of person.
You know, this is something that I've heard you guys talk about on the show for a long time. And it's one of the things I've always yelled at my radio while I'm driving in my car.
You didn't like that hypothesis?
I don't know how eloquently I can put this. But when you have tribe designations and identities, I think there is something to be said about them if they work in the favor of sort of a hardworking, prideful manner. So white collar, when they're like, you're the white collar. I remember Shireen going, I don't want to be white collar. And I'm like, I don't think I'm white collar. I'm like a writer, producer running around in LA. It wasn't something that kind of identified us with, that we wanted to all join in on. We got blue collars. That's a whole different ball game, right? That's a, you know, they're throwing low balls out there. They like this stuff. It's something that bonds us. We're hardworking, sweat, tears. You know, I was thinking about heroes, hustlers, and hussies or whatever it was. You know,
I don't think it was hussies.
I forget. It was a long time ago, Rob. You know, they're you know, I think if you're a hustler, there's another part of that that's you know, that's you kind of you bond together.
So you feel
bit.
Like if the tribe connotation is a positive one, then you think that people are more bonded together. And if it's more of a negative one, although ironically, you know, we've heard the Goliath tribe throw around the a Goliath as a positive of like, you guys are playing like a bunch of Davids. You're all being a bunch of Davids out there running around with like chickens without a head. Damn. As opposed to, you know, we even heard Natalie talk about in this episode about how she was Goliath strong.
I am Goliath strong.
So do the Goliaths see the Goliath label as a positive now?
They could. I think it's in the eye of the beholder. I just finished.
I mean, Angelina said, you know, that's the kind of this could be my Goliath moment.
Sure. Well, that's also what.
Like when I got that free appetizer at Applebee's.
This is also what production loves to see, right? Is to kind of work into that thing before they all throw it out in episode four. I just got done watching Australian Survivor, and they're, you know, we're the contenders versus the champions. We got to take them down. It's a lot of the David Goliath kind of thing. I think there's identity sometimes in these tribes that you can really latch on to if you can get everybody else to drink the Kool-Aid. It can be powerful. I certainly saw it on my season, which is why maybe I'm the one who's drinking the Kool-Aid. Blue collar was like five of the last seven.
So do you think that there will be hesitation with these tribes in a tribe swap, or you think that people will be flipping willy-nilly?
I think because it's so early, the flippers are going to be flipping all over the flipping
place. Okay, flipping all over the flipping place. This is a good question that we got from one of our listeners. This one is from Drew, who said, three episodes into the season, do you feel like it's too early to predict who is going to be a purple character from this point forward? So far, I feel like that the most purple have been Natalia, Dr. Allison, and Davey, which I don't think I necessarily agree with. I mean, Davey has found an idol. I don't think that he's been invisible. Natalia, I've had a hard time differentiating between her and Angelina during moments. I wouldn't say that necessarily she's been purple.
Isn't it Lyrsa?
Purple Lyrsa.
Excuse me?
I'm just talking about her hair.
She has purple hair. Yeah. Is there anybody that you feel like has gotten sort of the Chelsea treatment that's been the most invisible person in the season?
Well, I think we just played our game where I said that Dr. Allison studies invisibility. I think that's kind of my choice.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, Dr. Allison, I guess she might be 17 out of 17 so far, but I mean, Alec hasn't really done a ton.
Alec,
you know, pick your poison there. So I'm trying to think if there's anybody else who, you know, hasn't had a ton. Carl hasn't had, you know, a moment, but he was crying.
In the beginning. Yeah. I think Alec and Lyrsa and Allison are sort of there.
Okay.
All right. Glad we got that figured out.
Tyler, what else from David versus Goliath three episodes in?
Man, that I'm.
Did we get to everything that you wanted to talk about? I know you want to talk about the history of David versus Goliath.
We don't need to go into that.
What else do you have? What else did you bring?
No other games. I was told don't bring more games, that Rob's not going to like it.
Who told you that?
I talked to Nicole.
Yes. Okay. And then Nicole said to only bring one game.
She said, yeah, bring one game. He's so well prepared. He's got it all taken care of.
I mean,
he'll handle it.
I mean, it's not completely, you know,
actually,
there.
I did take a bunch of notes.
Not a wild hypothesis.
Actually, looking at all of my stuff, we went through it. You know, in the preseason, you were talking about, I think that somebody's going to quit hearing about these cyclones and typhoons or whatever they were that were coming through. I actually thought that that was going to be Jessica, without a doubt. And I just thought she wasn't going to handle it in the first two episodes, and that never really came true.
These guys have handled the weather remarkably well. I mean, to the point where it seems odd that there was a moment where Jeff was asking them about the weather and wanted to, you know, tell them, like, boy, you guys seem like you're really pumped up. What's that all about? He asked them this.
Is that just speaking to the nature of the adventure inside each of you?
I'm on the tri-mat of life, Rob, and all I can do is smile.
Yeah, they're like you. It's just a force of positivity of life.
Just happy to be here.
Yeah. There was also this other odd thing in the episode where there was a lot of thunder and lightning going on. Jeff was impressed with the thunder in the episode.
It's authentic.
That was big.
But at Tribal Council, there was a question that he asked Angelina, which I thought was odd.
Angelina, was there ever a time where you would watch Survivor and the rain's coming down and then the thunder cracks and you go, it probably didn't really thunder. They probably added that in.
Does anybody have that take of that it's not really raining and that they add in the thunder and lightning?
It's my hope, Rob.
Yes.
It's real, okay? It's what gets me through the days and the nights.
Is that like somebody in Slam Town of like, it was real to me?
Yeah, probably with their heads getting bounced off the tarp.
Yeah. So, okay.
Did we talk about the whole like funeral, like, you know?
Oh, no, let's talk about the funeral. Yeah. So, yeah, take that, all you weather truthers out there trying that the lightning isn't real on Survivor.
Or the thunder.
Yes. Okay. Let's talk about the funeral, because we saw Jeremy saying about how that he knows that 9 people would be there for his funeral. Listen to what he had to say.
Nala can think what she want to think, but I guarantee if I died right now and they laid my body right there, 9 of these people would be at my funeral. If she died, I don't think we could say the same.
Okay. So I just want to explore that for a second, because it's a kind of a dark thought, but I think that Jeremy is, look at the fine print there. So in 9 people in the tribe at his funeral, but again, listen to the actual funeral arrangements.
Nala can think what she want to think, but I guarantee if I died right now and they laid my body right there, 9 of these people would be at my funeral.
I mean, I guess if Jeremy died right there and they laid his body right there, then technically, you know, they would all be at the funeral.
There are a lot of math truthers out there that were hating on him. And you know what? I got Jeremy's back on this.
Yes.
It doesn't need to be right there, Rob.
Yes.
Because how many people are out there at that moment right there?
I mean, more than 9.
No. Well, how many are left?
I mean, in the tribe? Yeah. Yeah.
What, there's 10?
Well, I mean, he was trying to make it sound like they like him so much.
I'm saying is we're forgetting one important person who could also show up.
Who, Jeff?
Jeff Probst.
Okay.
So there could be 9.
Why?
Natalie doesn't show up. Jeff shows up in her place. You got 9. Mm-hmm. Jeremy got it right, everybody.
Yeah.
He got it right.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that, I mean, they're all there already. So if he died and the funeral was there, they laid him right there. They're already at the funeral. Nobody had to go anywhere.
They also have a pyre right mm-hmm. there. Do you think they just lay him on that like Darth Vader at the end of Return of the Jedi and just sort of?
I don't know.
That's dark. Like a burn.
It's a little dark. And then I'm not so sure about Angeline after this week. But it seems that he seemed at the moment.
Was it a little hashtag Will Sims, Shireen, like you got no soul? I mean, that was a really rough one. I don't want to compare.
Yeah, I don't think I'm supposed to talk about that anymore. I think that's the expiration date.
Oh, okay. Millennials versus Gen X.
Sure. Let's get back to it. All right. Tyler, let's see. What else? It was a very slow week on the Survivor social media. Nobody's saying anything good.
That awesome Charmpocalypse now.
Yes.
Yeah. Where were y'all on that one, Likers?
That was good. Mama C said, great episode tonight. Bye. Hashtag David versus Goliath. Hashtag Survivor. Hashtag CBS.
Wait, hold on. That's the one you decided of all of them? Great episode tonight?
I'm trying to tell you that there's nothing that exciting going on right now on Survivor social media.
So we picked great episode tonight.
That was my tweet to illustrate to you that there's nothing that exciting going on.
If that's the best we got, we might as well just shred that paper and head on and just close it up.
Well, I printed it out, but, you know, we had so many other things to talk about. You know, we did get from a lot of people, they sent in some Survivor Tweets jingles. So I don't know if I necessarily want to do too much with the Survivor Tweets, but I want to play you some Survivor Tweets jingles, okay?
Do we get to pick the one of the rest of the year, or what do
no,
we do?
No, just for this game? Just for this week.
Okay. Can I ding it or
yeah, ding it or buzz it?
Am I allowed to touch the dinger?
Is it a low ball dinger?
Oh.
No, but sometimes the guests, they get crazy and they just like start like, you know, whacking it. And if you can do it.
Yeah. Am I that kind of, you think I'm going to get
accused? I don't know. I'll hand it over, but just don't go crazy. It's not, right. Don't take it to Slam Town.
By the way, that ding, that was me. That was Ron handing it over.
Okay. Here's Patricia.
Okay.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than ruining someone's marriage because they got you voted off. Tweets.
I mean, yeah.
Yes,
you like it. I don't think that the marriage got ruined.
Can you promise me something that you and Josh will kind of dip into that? Because on a serious note, the fact that she's, you know, issuing her own stuff to Dalton or to Josh. And is this unprecedented?
It is unprecedented that we had to get a reaction from another person.
And how does that, just being real with it, how does that make you feel? I mean, as somebody who like can't get her on the podcast to respond, do you feel like you're missing out a little bit on, you know, kind of filling in the whole picture? Why is CBS now suddenly interacting with journalists and not the podcasters?
It doesn't bother me. I mean, I'm going to talk to Josh about it on the podcast. No issue there.
I was just wondering if we feel like, you know, every other Goliath that gets voted out from here on out, if this is something that we're going to have to address, that we're going to have to talk. What was it about Jeremy and Angela? Next person, was it real? I'm sure
we'll get back into it when we talk to another Goliath.
Okay. So
it's really bothering you.
It's not bothering me. I just find it to be really, really fascinating that somebody can come out and either say a lie or a truth, mm-hmm. and then have a response, issue their own response. The journalists are now talking about it. Didn't you mention the other day that the articles were canon? I mean,
whether the exit interview is canon. Interview. Well, again,
it's a slippery slope, is it not?
I don't even want to say that Jeremy was telling a falsehood here.
I'm not saying that.
In Jeremy's perception, that he felt like that she had a showmance. I mean, the issue was, could we define what a showmance is? That I feel like that we should have criteria of, it should be sort of like a binary thing. What is a showmance? What is not a showmance? He seemed to feel like that they had a showmance, and then she is saying that, no, I had a friendship with somebody.
I just find it really fascinating that we're now able to respond in the middle of the season. I mean, Wiggler was interviewing Christian, mm-hmm. you know, a couple episodes
in. So you don't like the extra access?
I love all the extra access.
I like it because it's through the official channels. It, you know, it's better than, okay, you know, hey, let me get on Periscope to respond to these charges.
Yeah. I mean, I love when people are like, yo, it didn't actually go that way. Or we were targeting Nick. He was going to go home first. That was the choice. But when now suddenly there's drama and conflict and it's secrets and lies that aren't being shown on the show and people are able to respond to it. Is that not, we're opening up a can of something that could get really, really testy down the road.
So you feel like that we could go down the primrose path?
Yeah. Good.
Okay. All right. Here's one from Charles.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. It's better than half of tribal council being about Natalie. Tweets.
I like that tribal council was about Natalie.
That was right.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna overdo. I'm not gonna touch either one.
All right, so you say that one was neither.
It was okay.
It was just okay.
I think that the first one is gonna have a season long longevity. I think the first one is a one off. But good work, guys. Keep it up. Way better than I can do.
All right, here's Jake.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. It's better than your fake showmance getting leaked. Tweets.
Oh, that was the other way around. You like that one too.
I'm telling you.
Pick a side.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. I just, yeah.
Being a fancy fencer.
Is it a showmance or is it a no-mance? Let's find out. Next week on The Hollywood Reporter.
All right. Oh, wait. Here's DJ LaBelle Klein.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. The official dish of Slamtown is a tray of sorted meats.
Just dropped the bomb at the end, the napalm.
Why is the official dish of Slamtown assorted meat?
Where do you think the primrose path is in Slamtown? Does it lead up to the mayor's office?
I think so. You take the primrose path down to the mayor's office in Slamtown. All right. One other one. This is from Chad, who sends along with his jingle a signed picture of himself with Tyler Fredrickson.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. Wearing a monogrammed Rodney Ball shirt.
Tweet or Insta will compete. If you punt on Natalie, then Jeremy is beat.
Oh, a little reverb at the end. It was the whispers. Yeah, it's a secret to lies.
I don't know if I'm going to play them all every week, but you know, if the tweets aren't great, then I'll just play the songs.
Good work, guys. He's not going to overdo it, just like the guests do when they come in here and do this.
All right, there we go.
You couldn't resist.
All right. Tyler.
Yes, Rob.
What do you want to let people know about? Anything you want to plug or promote?
Nah, not really. I'm working on the side at a little winery in the Central Coast. I brought Rob a bottle.
I'm sure that the First Lady of Podcasting is going to be really indulging tonight.
And if you guys are looking for jobs in the old Hollywood industry, I run a little Patreon that's been kind of fun.
Tell us about what you're doing there.
So when I was actually at CAA, a lot of people would pass jobs on to me because I was desperate to get out. And I'd look at these jobs and be like, I don't really want this. I think I'm more qualified, which I probably wasn't. So I delete them. After a while, I was meeting everybody else in the building and they're like, we want to get out of here too. And I'm like, I got deleted job ops in my inbox. I started a small little listserv. It's grown and grown and grown. And we started we're now on a Patreon. There's a monthly subscription where you can get jobs to work in music and in TV and get your
foot in the door. So these are no collar jobs?
These are very much industry. They're not white collar, but you know, like assistant jobs, executive jobs, kind of getting your foot in the door. So if you are a recent college grad, if you got a friend, or a brother, a kid brother, so looking to get involved.
This is great because at the time I started the podcast, that I was somebody who was very much looking for this type of job, and it was very hard to come by. And then that either you would just apply to things and then never hear any word back. And I think I went on two or three interviews in I don't know how many months. But got nowhere.
Right.
So you have a list. So people are, you have a way to get access to people that are looking for these positions. And then when people are, part of this Patreon, then they get access to the job site information.
Yeah, we got a couple different levels of the Patreon. You get access quicker the more you subscribe, and we get we get anywhere from 2 to 20 jobs a week. I mean, the thing grows, and just sort of my.
And you have partners on this?
I had a couple of guys who helped me get it off the ground a few years ago when I was working at CAA. Now I'm predominantly running it, but we've become like the most talked about private listserv in the industry, and it's been really, really great. So. Anyway, it's just like
how do people find it?
We're on Patreon/ I think it's Hollywood Job/HollywoodJobOps.
Okay,
so kind of poke around there if you guys are looking for something. You can see we put out a lot of really great content. Finding a job is like in LA is like finding a really great apartment in LA. You don't go to Craigslist. All those things have been run through.
It's like finding a great apartment in Slamtown. Yeah,
yeah, and they've all been slammed in Craigslist. So what you got to do is,
and it's not rent control in Slamtown.
You got to be able to talk to somebody and who knows somebody who knows somebody's gonna be moving out in a few months, and then you're able to be the first in line. Same thing kind of with jobs. So, having less eyes on a certain opportunity allows you a higher, percentage of getting it.
Okay. All right. Well, great work, Tyler. Did you have fun coming in?
I had a blast.
Okay, good.
I mean, the beginning kind of got off a little rough.
Which part?
This is the very, very beginning.
The intro?
Well, I just...
Why, how would you critique it?
Felt like I'd been backstabbed the other night. I'm so thankful for Steven.
Yeah.
Because without sort of having a cheerleader in my corner, I probably wouldn't have showed up.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to offend. That's not how I would have described you as, the force of light and positivity.
And now that we spent time together, you still agree with that?
Yeah, that's not you.
Well, what am I?
I think that you're somebody who's very smart. You're very knowledgeable, sarcastic. I think that you have a good sense of humor. But in terms of being it sounds like he was talking about like Sunday Berkquist and not you.
I think I have different I'm a chameleon, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have different personalities.
Like he's talking about like
people.
Dawn Meehan.
I think with or without teeth.
With.
Okay. Well, one of the first ways that Steven and I actually bonded, and this is going to really show me to be loser, or both of us losers, is that I'm a huge
Hamlet.
I'm Disney. I'm a huge Disneyland fan. And so when he was going out for this bachelor party, we communicated a lot about different hacks and tools of the trade, and that you got to bring in alcohol and all the different other fun things.
And that's a good bachelor party idea?
No. Well, it depends on who you are. I mean, I would have gone. But so I think, you know, the light and the
if you were invited,
the light and the happiest place on earth and all that other stuff. And there's two things that really make me happy. One is Disneyland. The other is not having millennials versus Gen X. It's all jealousy, Rob. That's all it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's Brett and Chris and you know, it's these guys always being on my TV screen. And, and like I said, if I see them on my TV screen again, I'm going to throw a bicycle through
my
glass.
You're going to be mad. You'll be mad.
I'll throw a bicycle through the
glass. All right. So we have the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday. So looking forward to getting into all of the exit interview controversy with Josh, his thoughts on the episode, any hypotheses that he might have.
Showmans versus no mans. Tell us what you got. What do you think out there, guys?
Yeah. And then we will get into the wand off for episode number 3. And I can tell you that the Wandoff submissions are already rolling in. So a lot of stuff that we will check out with Josh Wiggler. And then very excited to get into another week of Survivor. Episode number 4 coming up. We'll be back to the know-it-alls on Wednesday night with Stephen Fishback.
I love that guy. He's got my...
Yes,
he's
wow,
got,
you are...
He's in my corner.
So such a Stephen stan now.
He's in my corner. In fact, I'd vote for him as mayor.
As mayor of Slamtown. Yeah,
absolutely. He's got our best interest
Would
in
he
heart.
Be a good mayor?
Yeah, he'd probably be too neurotic.
Yeah, you don't need a neurotic mayor.
No, you need somebody who's... You need a penner.
You need... Yes, you need somebody who's going to be, you know, a calm hand at the till. Is that what they call it?
I don't know.
At the wheel? I'm not sure.
At the wheel. And by the way, all the love to Penner, who him and his family are going through some really rough stuff. And the guy, him and Stacy, his wife, who's been sick for a while. Much love to the family who's just really opened up their house to a lot of people, including myself, with kindness and generosity. I text them from time to time, just, dude, I got all the love for you. So,
yeah.
It hurts. It hurts when fellow survivors, this is a funky little fraternity, guys. And you kind of really get to know people doing the travails. And it hurts when other people are hurting.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tyler, thank you again for coming in. Greatly appreciate it.
Dude, thanks for having me. I'm so thankful to be invited back. And again, sorry to let down everybody else who thought it would be the other Tyler.
Yeah. Why, did you get that a lot in terms of Tyler from Big Brother?
No, I didn't. Occasionally people would at me, but...
Yeah. I had tweeted out, if anybody is not on the Twitter, that they're like, hey, I've been hearing all summer, people have been dying to hear from Tyler on the podcast, so finally he is going to be here. And then send your questions for at the T Freddy. And so people, for the most part, you know, got it. A couple people were like, oh, finally. And then, you know, then it's a whole thing.
A lot of people booed, and that's okay. I think it's fine.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And maybe one day we'll talk to the other Tyler and ask about showmances and what he thinks about the Goliaths and all that stuff. But that will wait for another day. Thank you guys so much for listening. Of course, thanks again to the patrons of Rob as a Podcast. Probably can't get you a job working anywhere, but if you want to find out about the other benefits of becoming a Rob as a Podcast patron, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Have a good one, everybody. Take care.
See everybody.
You want to give the hashtag?
Oh yeah, we
hashtag
do that.
Hypothesis.
But that's spelled the exact same way.
What about with a hyphen?
Do hashtags work with hyphens?
What about hashtag hypo hashtag thesis?
Is that that's too many
hashtag hypotenuse
hashtag oh gosh
hashtag primrose path.
That works for me.
Okay, let's do it. All right, take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Thanks, everybody.